Yeah, but I mean our thing.
Not seat here. Good, he's all right.
Yes. Hello, Philip.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello, at your shouting sign. Ladies and gentlemen, that's better. Okay, we'll make a start to the meeting. I believe that we're quorate. I think, Glenn, you'd agree with that, so we can continue. The first item is adoption of minutes of October the 11th. These have been posted for the appropriate time. I'd like to have a proposer to accept the minutes. Do I hear somebody?
Yes, I'll propose, I'll make a motion that we accept the minutes as presented.
Okay, and thank you. Do I have a seconder?
I second it.
Now then, thank you. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Anybody against? Anybody abstaining? No, very good. Let me just test that we have remote participation from Names Council members. Names Council, who are not here, please reveal yourselves.
Eric Roberts online.
Paul Kane online.
I heard Paul Kane online. Grant, were you online also?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Very good. We can hear you now. And who else do we have?
Erica Roberts.
Erica, you're very welcome.
Excellent.
And do we have Guillermo? No. Okay, we're missing Guillermo then. That's great. We heard you all, and let's hope this works. If you want to intervene at any stage, please call out, but I can also see your name on this little text facility, so you can send me messages if necessary. We move now to a 30-minute session or so, and we welcome members again of the at-large committee. And I believe that, Carl, you have a small presentation for us first, and then we go into a question session. Is that right? Okay. You're very welcome. Please.
Thanks. That's the way I understand it's been planned. And what I'll do for the benefit of the online community, really, is to go through some slides, which I hope will be available out there in the world that is outside Marina del Rey. This just gives you an overview of the final report from the large study committee as it was posted 10 days, 2 weeks ago, something along those lines, following the discussions that we have had. That is really what we were asked to do, to find some sort of viable compromise, some sort of solution to this particular issue. We have found support for a number of principles. That's the easy part of it, that individual users have significant stake and should have an opportunity to fully participate in the work of ICANN. That there should be the representation that should we both have the representation and we have the informed and sustained participation, which is important. That the at-large electorate should comprise an identifiable and vested community of individual users. At-large members should have a shared role in selecting members of ICANN's board. And then, very important, of course, it's time to move beyond discussion and determine the degree of real interest in creating an organization for sustaining at-large involvement in ICANN, that's at-large member support, at-large support organization. And that is the at-large support organization, as I said, to create this particular structure for participation and for an ongoing involvement on a regional basis in the discussions that are there. We would like to set up this organization and to start setting it up to promote informed participation of any interested individual, foster large involvement in decision making, and of course we have set up or we have proposed a specific structure for how that should be done in terms of elections also linked to the elections to the members of the ICANN board. We would, and this has been one of the, as you are aware of, topics of discussion. We have the sort of the core membership, ALSO electors, or the individual domain name holders. But one of the issues where I think you will find that we have sort of elaborated since Montevideo is that we have now domain name plus. Domain name for a number of reasons is the core, but the plus, there are other ways of opting into this particular structure in order to overcome some of the problems that might be there otherwise. And we have some suggestions, we would like to have further work on that, and we would not like to close off that particular debate. We would like to have, based on that particular core, the membership there, we would like to have then the elections of six at-large directors in six different constituencies. That means dividing up the present Asia Pacific constituency, which is huge, dividing that up into two. There have been some concerns expressed that that is a very difficult issue to do. I belong to those that fail to see that that is a difficult issue to deal with, but if there is any difficulties with making that division, the solution is clearly that we just elect two from the Asia-Pacific and one from each of the rest. But as said, I fail to see that that is going to be much of a problem. Final recommendations, self-sustained, transparent, ALSO, and could I underline the self-sustaining part of it? Because that has to do, of course, with the financial aspects of it. There are no such things as free lunches, and there are no such things as free organizations. They have to be paid for the one way or the other. And we've been devoting quite an amount of time to discuss how we could have an organization or a structure for participation in elections where the financing is integral to the organization itself. That means that there will have to be some sort of fee. I think that's unavoidable, because from somewhere the money will have to come. Money very seldom rains from heaven, and it is logical that that should be there. At the same time, it shouldn't be too much. It should be as low as possible, because the hurdle to opt into this particular structure should be as low as possible. And that is also one of the reasons why we ended up, by the way, with the domain name holders, because it is the, what we believe, the cheapest way and the most practical way in which you can organize these particular elections. Then at the end, at the sort of the bottom of this particular slide, you find that another item where we have elaborated and changed or evolved from Montevideo is that it was pointed out in Montevideo to us, and there was an concern expressed that if we have sort of a third of the board of Ike being at large, and it requires two-thirds majority to change the bylaws and the structures, in theory you can have sort of the rest of Ike abolishing at large. That's clearly not a good thing. It might be rather academic and theoretical concern. But anyhow, in order to answer those concerns, we want to have some sort of larger majority, two-thirds plus, in order to make structural changes for ICANN. That's an issue involved here, as you can hear exactly how one defines that. But I think that's an important point from the policy point of view. Recommendations, as you can see on this slide, they are, we believe, practical, executable, effective, and most likely to gain consensus support. And I like to stress that we've been somewhat concerned, not least those of us who've been coming somewhat from the outside, looking at ICANN, we've been somewhat concerned with the fact that this issue has been going on for years, and it tends to distract from what ICANN is supposed to do. So it is important to get a compromise sort of consensus. Not everyone is going to be happy, but something that everyone can live with, that provides stability to ICANN for some time. And that means that it has to be a proposal that is implementable, that is practical. And although there are outstanding issues in our proposal, and there are technical issues that need to be sorted out, we are fairly confident that this is implementable. It is possible to do. It's not a theoretical exercise, and I think that is very important. We think it is a reasonable compromise, and we haven't really seen any other suggestion that fulfills these particular criteria. Here, we have been all over the place trying to solicit views. We've had quite a lot of input. Not that much, you can say, if you look at it with a perspective of 500 million internet users out there in the wider world, but still quality input from different parts of the internet community that has been helping us in shaping our report. We say here that we can't really claim that we have a system that is fail-safe in every single respect, but we think that we have the system that has the least problems in the different respects that we have been dealing with. And as to the work that is now ahead of us, as you are aware of, the plan was for us to present according to the schedule and then for final decision on these issues by the ICANN board here in Marina del Rey, and then be able to move forward from that on during next year. Now, there has been the change of emphasis of this particular meeting, perfectly understandable, but it is subject of some concern of us that one doesn't defer and let these issues slip too much. Because if one does that, it means that it will not be possible to have any system, this or another system, implemented by next year. And then we will have continued instability in the governance structure of ICANN. That would be to the detriment of the possibility of ICANN to execute its core task. And that is why we have suggested a draft resolution to the board where the board moves the issues forward, a number of them. And that leaves us also a couple of more months to start dealing with some of the implementation issues, start setting up an organizing committee for the at-large support organization, and perhaps in order for ICANN outside our mandate to deal with other issues that might be on the table. That's the end of the slides. I think it covered fairly familiar ground for most of you, but that's roughly where we are at the moment.
Carl, thank you very much. Before we go to questions, perhaps we'll just go around the constituencies very quickly, about perhaps a minute or less each, just to say what conclusions, if any, you've come to as a constituency on the report. I know it's discussed at a number of meetings today, and that may be useful feedback in composite for the committee. Marilyn, can I ask you to start on that?
Certainly. The BC has worked quite extensively within our own constituency and engaged in ongoing outreach to others in the business user community. And we have taken a generally supportive position on the recommendations of the report. Our comments on the draft report are on our website, and we will be continuing to take supporting positions tonight and with the GA to endorse the concept of the board moving forward. We think that the key point about stability is really critical, and that ICANN has important work to do, not just in helping to ensure that there is that large participation and representation that is balanced, but also to be able to focus on other key issues that need to be undertaken. So we are offering our support.
GTLD, go to please.
The GTLD registries have established a working group to study both the at-large and the issue of ICANN organizational structural issues. We believe these two issues are linked, that it is difficult to address one without addressing both. The constituency is supportive of the principles put forward by the at-large study commission, although we've not addressed all the details, so are not in a position to comment on many of the details, but the core principles in terms of participation and the nature and level of at-large participation in the board, we're supportive of.
Bruce Strauss, that be you, Ken, or one of your others?
At this point in time, I'd say that the registrars have been studying the issues. There are some proposals that we're working on that kind of run somewhat in parallel with what you've with your comments today. I think that from a practical standpoint, we need to take a closer look at the potential impact. And when I say that, I'm really saying that we need to look at what ICANN will mean in the 3, 4, 5 years from now.
Thank you for that. And CCs.
There is still taking the report under advisement. We received a presentation from ALSC today. We have a drafting meeting, I believe it's Wednesday at about 1500 hours. And we've spent probably an hour in our assembled group going over what we agree with and what we don't agree with. While we agree with a lot of the principles, I can only tell you now that one thing we do not agree with is the restriction of membership to those who are domain name holders. Although Carl did point out in his presentation that there is some proposal within the at large to expand that somewhat. We intend to issue a communique on our position with what we support and what we do not support prior to the ICANN board meeting at this meeting.
Okay, non-commercials.
Yes, the non-commercial constituency is not changing its position from the Montevideo meeting, which was we passed a resolution expressing our support for 9 at-large publicly elected directors. We are encouraged by signs of movement. We like the concept of domain name plus that you're articulating, and other than that, we are simply observing the process and hoping that it does take into account issues of domain name structure, domain name supporting organization structure, as well as the at-large members.
Vice, please.
The ISPCP discussed this morning at our meeting. We are generally supportive of the at-large report. We certainly see it as a basis of moving things forward. There are a few issues of detail that we have some concerns about, and we will be issuing a statement on behalf of the constituency, which will be posted at this meeting and submitted to the at-large committee as well.
Thank you, Tony. And the IPs?
We're generally in support of the report. Just, I guess, some areas I'll point out. One, with respect to the six seats, we would just caution that the rest of the ICANN board seats be allocated in a way not to disenfranchise other participants. With respect to the voting, they've mentioned that they've got to kind of work out the details, and I'm hopeful that in establishing some sort of verification that that might help improve even the WHOIS system in terms of administrative contacts. For instance, when corporate companies register the domains, oftentimes it's just a generic address that's indicated as an admin, so there are issues that have to be worked out. With respect to we felt that there was perhaps a way, knowing the urgency of the election of the at-large board members, that perhaps there was a way to kind of disengage and look at this as two issues, the election and ALSO. The ALSO obviously requiring, we think, is a lot more time and effort, especially given the funding question. I mean, we've seen how the Names Council has struggled a lot because of financial reasons and lack of resources. And so we thought that it might be prudent to look at whether we could separate the issue of the electorate versus the actual creation of the ALSO, both moving forward at the same time, but obviously one requiring a much longer time frame. The other thing was just we thought that initial staggered terms would be more appropriate. In our own constituency, an example is all three of us on the Names Council will end our terms this year, and we'll have three fresh new faces. Which is a good thing, but that to have them all gone and while we'll still be around, I would think that, again, at the board level, it would be nice to have staggered terms to provide stability. And also, we think that reevaluating the at-large 6 years after its implementation is a bit long, and perhaps maybe after the initial 3 years, it warrants at least the commencement of a review, that 6 years is a long time to go before reevaluating a process that's going to be fairly new.
Yeah. Carly, thanks very much. Carl, I mean, there may be some points you've heard already you want to pick up on.
Let me state, which I didn't do in the beginning, I mean, our appreciation for the comments, not only these, but I would primarily those earlier, when we're in the earlier stage, because that's been very important for us in order to be able to develop these particular proposals. So you have some comments and some of the remarks. One, there are other issues concerning ICANN governance, and one should move forward with those as well, and they need to be sorted out as well. I mean, as a committee, we have no views on that, because our task is to sort out or try to assist in the sorting out of this particular issue, and I do think that is imperative. I mean, I'm an outsider, but I do see the need to achieve some sort of here. I can also see the necessity of moving on these other issues, yes, although it's outside of us. And if there is one sort of silver lining to what's been happening now in terms of the different timescales we're operating on, further 3 months, it is, of course, that it gives an opening for others to take on the issues of the other issues, so that when the sort of the final things are put in cement concerning this issue, in March one would hope that there would be the readiness to move on the other issues as well. That is not a question for our committee, but I think that all of the members of the committee individually would consider that to be a good idea if it's done by someone else. Then, second, as was alluded to, the evolution. The domain name, or the individual domain name, is the core structure. But as you said, domain name plus, and I would even say domain name plus plus, because we do see the potential for different pluses. The reason for the domain name, I mean, there are different ones, but if I take the practical ones, it is, of course, that they can verify without having sort of mail and all of the problems that we saw during the trial election last year, and all of the vast financial repercussions that comes from that. But there might be other ways of verifying as well. And I think that we will have to be creative. In one, which we discussed in another meeting, which is a fairly simple one. I mean, people who turn up at a meeting like this and want to be part and opt into the structure, it's fairly easy to verify who these people are. If we can't verify them, they're not supposed to be allowed into the room even. So that's just one option. We have discussed different separate domain names. We've discussed different ways of doing it together with the UNDP in terms of developing work. So I would underline, and we do it in the report, that we must work more on these sort of plus and plus plus issues in this particular regard. On the ALSO and separation from that from the elections, I would be somewhat more cautious because the, if I take the liberty of saying that, the beauty of our proposal, but everyone thinks it is beautiful, but anyhow, we do, is that it does link the two in the election process. We don't, with this particular proposed elections, we set up everything at the same time. We elect the 6 members to the Icon board, and we elect the 6 regional council of the ALSO. So we get them in place, at least the councils. Then I think that the process of setting up these ALSOs and getting to work over time, that will be somewhat different in different parts of the world. And it will take some time. And we shouldn't expect sort of perfection to descend upon the world in that particular respect within just a couple of weeks or months or even years. We do have evaluation after 3 years, or 4 years it will be, as a matter of fact, because I mean, we one election next year and then the other one 3 years from then, and then we say, let's look at the entire thing. But it's not going to be 6 years, I hope, but it will be, I guess, 3 years, and then the year after that, you start to look at the entire thing. Yes. But as has been indicated here as well, there are technical implementation issues that we need to start address now. Because if one doesn't start now, we will not be able to do it during next year. And although this is not a question you can say it's committed, it's not a question for the committee, because if we deliver our report and you can do whatever you want with it. But out of concern for ICANN, I think it's important that it is done. So that we get a result out of Marina del Rey where one moves forward with this. Might be some outstanding issues where we need to work somewhat more. If there's a parallel work on other issues, that's not our responsibility, but I would see that from the general point of view as supportive and constructive and good. And then one would hope that there would be the decision-making power in this organization, or the consensus-shaping power that allows there to be a final decision in 3 months' time.
Before we go on to other questions, Carl, Caroline mentioned this of the funding model. I think it's quite key. One of the things that I liked in your report was the fact that you're recommending the board considers dedicated staff to supporting the activities of all supporting organisations, and certainly that's something that we have mentioned in respect to the DNSO before, and I think would be wise certainly for the ALSO. But for the funding model for the structure of the organisation itself, you have in mind, I understand, a fairly slim organization. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it's correct to say that we have that in mind. If you were to sort of go further with the question and say, what's the staff structure? We haven't done that. It's too early because we don't have sort of agreement on setting up such a thing. But I think, and please, Esther and Pinder and Chuck, join in. I mean, I'm concerned with getting, as we say, this has to be funded. There has to be money paid. I'm concerned with that being as low as possible because I don't want to have the hurdle for opt-in to be high. Then you might ask, well, will we have the money then to set up a structure that is really relevant to support this? Well, you can phrase it another way and say that's going to be quite an incentive for them to recruit members in order to be able to fund. And I would err on the side of a lean organization with then, if there is a possibility of setting some cap on the money or the individual membership fee or the money paid by the individuals, I don't know. But that philosophical approach, which gives them the incentive to really go out with also the plus-plus elements of this, because that would be their way of also getting increased financial resources. And the financial, as you hear, details need to be worked out, but this is the philosophy of it, and an important integral part of our process.
Council, other questions? Okay.
I don't
I don't want to repeat Philip's question, but I do want to expand on it because the economics of the proposal are not entirely clear. I wonder if you could, and I know you haven't addressed this in detail, but sketch out what are the basic costs that would arise from the full implementation, what are the kinds of costs that would arise, and what are the sources of funds that you would see covering those costs? You don't have to give me amounts, but sort of where do the new expenses come from, and where's the money going to come from to cover them?
Well, there are two time perspectives to that answer. The first time perspective is the immediate one, next year. In our opinion, there has to be some sort of seed funding for Mike to get this started. When that has been done, that should not be the case in the future. This should be a self-financing thing. So it should be financed by itself. And that's part of what is important as well. Then concerning the cost, we believe that with this sort of, we believe that with the sort of domain name as the basis and then the plus, plus, plus in different ways, if you can verify who these people are, the election is cheap. In contrast, if you go with mail, where the election is expensive, you're probably sort of up in the $10 a vote category with the other option. Here we are probably, Chuck, well below $1, well below that. So then it's a question of what do you want to add to that. And that amounts to a very large extent to staff. And here, I mean, your numbers is as good as my numbers. I mean, there has to be a core staff. But you can create massive international bureaucracies if you want. That would be hugely expensive and no one would be ready to pay for it. I would go personally for a very limited staff in the beginning to start to build this. But we will work on the costing somewhat more on this. But I would go for fairly limited in order to have the small hurdle, in order to have the incentive to get a fairly large participation. But Esther, Chuck, I think microphones are good because there are people online.
I'll give a half-hour speech. the idea is simply just as the goal the U.S. government had when ICANN was created was not to design it, but to ask for it to be created. In some sense, we have to do a little more design, but in the end, we want to create something that will then, as the ALSO itself, decide we want to be lean and mean so we can get lots of people, or we need more money, but it will have its own incentives, and we think it should start small and lean, because otherwise, frankly, it won't start at all.
Other, this is Pinder here. Other elements to the costing question is whether or not it's going to be just a one-off cost, a recurring cost, or an incremental cost. And this also depends on whether or not there will be other organizations coming forward who may support the formation of the ALSO. So one of the elements in our report is a request for sort of interest in helping the ALSO to get going, and whether or not entities or groups would be assisting in that would also factor into the eventual costs of both startup and running costs.
Really?
Chuck Costello. We, as Carl said, we haven't tried to cost it out too much yet, and one of the reasons is because we haven't wanted to be prescriptive as to what form these would take, that they could take different form in different regions, so long as they met with what we'd consider basic procedural fairness or openness in terms of membership and eligibility. But that my own assumption on this would be that for an organization which in many ways would be a collection of individuals and groups, a networking sort of arrangement, that you would need at least one full-time staff person to keep track of things. But otherwise, the ALSOs would rely much more on volunteered time of interested individuals who would be active in the group.
Thanks very much. Milton.
Yeah, I have a question that really hasn't been asked before, I don't think. You've put yourself in a position where you're studying the at-large, and the at-large was 9 members. There are 9 interim or initial at-large board members. And then your plan proposes to reduce that number to 6. And one of the rationales for this is capture. And I see, because of the regionalization of the voting, almost no possibility that the board would be captured by at-large members, understanding the diversity of the regions and the people that come from there. I do see a danger, depending on how the other 6, the other 2/3 of the board are defined, a danger of capture coming from that quarter. I don't know what you mean by a developer. I don't know exactly what you mean by a supplier. I know that most of the people that I consider developers are employed by suppliers. And if the structure that is set up, I know you considered your charge to be the at-large members and how they're selected, but can we accept 666 without knowing how the other 2/3 of the board are selected?
Good question. I think you can, but I mean that we've not been going into that for the obvious reason that it's not been our mandate. But the reason why we did go into that was that we did, and we've been discussing this before, I mean, of course we had to deal with the, in spite of the fact that we would start from scratch, we had to deal with the legacy and go back to see what was the philosophical thing that started this a couple of years ago. And this was this public-private belief that there was sort of public interest versus private interest, and it was 50-50, a balance between them. When we went into that, we didn't really see that. It doesn't cut that way. There are sort of public interest represented within, and public concern and public interest concern within the so-called private. And there could well be very private interests that are expressed within the alleged public portion of. So the public-private thing, we sort of fail to understand. It sounds good, but when you start to really go down to what it means, it doesn't mean anything. And that is why we said, okay, what's another way of looking at it? And that's where we evolved into, entered into this, those that are developed, those that provide, and those that use. We don't intend to close off that particular debate on exactly how you should define that in every single respect, but we think it's a more constructive way of looking at how we shape ICANN in the future than the old one. The capture problem, as you indicated, is there, and I think it's a real one. As you know, we don't say that we have presented a proposal that eliminates the capture problem. We don't. I think we can say that we have a proposal that, if it happens, we'll see it, and the consequences will be limited. And that's important. That applies to our part of what we present concerning ICANN. We have not, as you pointed out, gone into the other parts, but I think one should look at the same, with the same eyes on the other parts of it, to know that you can't really prevent it, but you should limit the consequences of it if it happens. And I think we can be fairly confident to say that we can limit the consequences of it happens. Be that the sort of private body that wants to throw money into something, or be that the national state, or be that something else that really wants to make a determined effort to capture one seat on the ICANN board. I think it can be done, but it will be detected immediately, and accordingly there will be a counteraction too.
Thank you. Vanny, then Ken, and then Paul.
Well, I have 3 questions. The first one is about the mission of this at-large study committee. As far as I understand, the mission was to deal about the at-large membership, but inside the actual structure. Why didn't you commit it in final solution inside the actual structure instead of suggesting to restructure completely the ICANN? I mean, I think that the task was one, and then you did something different.
No, I think we were asked to do a clean sheet study explicitly by the board. We were not bound by anything. And we did look at, as we said in the draft report, we might still have that text in this report, I can't remember, but we did start our discussions inside the committee by looking at very different schemes, like getting rid of at-large totally, and there are some who advocate that, or by saying, let's get rid of the rest. Let's have everything elected by some sort of at-large, which is another. And there are, as you know, there are those that advocate that as well. And we did look at both of these alternatives to see if they were viable. They were not, but it did serve the purpose of refining the arguments. And then we ended up at this particular proposal. But, I mean, it was clearly said to us by the board that it is a clean sheet study, and then we have ended up with something that sort of built on the legacy of the past years, or the, as you pointed out, it proposes changes. And, I mean, mind you, what was there before was never there before. Because for some reason, and I've not been part of the history, but for some reason, it was never possible to achieve a consensus inside ICANN on how to go forward with the thing that was there before. It was a subject of controversies, and one ended up with something that was a half measure, and one tried that, and it didn't really work. So when you say that was something there before, well, on paper, but never in reality.
Okay. I want just to be
Danny,
sure.
Danny, sorry.
Because I said I have three questions.
I'm sorry, but as chairman, I'm going to have to be a bit fair in terms of the questions on the table. If we've got a few minutes at the end, I'll come back to you, but I've got two more on the list already.
Okay.
Carl, I suppose I have to preface what I'm going to say by starting out telling you, being a CPA, I have a tendency to try to put some sort of financial impact on any decision-making process. I'm very concerned about the possibility that we may end up developing a plan that financially can never be implemented. And I think that at some point in time, we have to take a look at what we're doing here in light of the economy and in light of the practicality of being able to implement it. I appreciate the fact that you're starting with a clean sheet study, but if all we develop is an esoteric approach to what may be a very practical solution, if it could be financed and funded, we really, we're right back where we started 18 months ago. So I have to encourage you, and I'll lay a couple of concerns. I remember 6 months ago, Pinder came in and made an appeal for developing to registries and registrars to help him provide additional technical infrastructure to allow us to do certain things. I don't know what kind of response you've gotten, but I'm going to guess in an economy like this, with the concerns and the preoccupations that people have, it hasn't been overwhelming. And I guess we just have to look at that from a practical standpoint. I'm not trying to throw water on it. I'm just saying we've got to be practical. If we're going to be reaching out to 20, 30, 40 different cultural areas of the world, the costs alone to communicate and to bring our message effectively to these cultures could be staggering, because you can't do it in English. Chinese, the majority of Chinese, I know, just so you understand what I'm saying. Thank you.
No, and I couldn't agree more. It is a concern. And as you know from the discussions that we have had, when we've been looking at the different options that have been there, those particular concerns have been rather instrumental in taking us to this particular. That being said, we need still to be concerned with that particular thing. And you add in sort of half a sentence, right, you said, sure, that in these particular economic times, yeah, I think that sort of adds to the necessity of looking at the financial implementability of the entire thing. I mean, we share that. I think that will have to be an incremental approach. We have to start with something, and start with mean and lean, so we know we can do it and we can find it, and then develop it over time.
It goes back to the answer to the previous question, which is we need to ask them for a small amount of money, but also for their time. This thing is not going to fly if all the outreach is done by paid people. It's going to have to be done by volunteers, activist members, call them politicians of the web, whatever. But it's got to be bottom up, and we need some organizing staff paid, but that's it.
Okay, and Paul Kane, you have a question, I think.
Thank you, Philip. Thank you, Carl, for the briefing. I think, as Ken has already indicated, the registrar constituency hasn't had chance to review and consider this issue in detail. But one question I have is, who do you see as the collectors of the dues paid by the opted-in registrants or parties that want to be part of the at-large community?
I lost Denise. Oh, pinned up. Well, whatever, yeah. Denise, sorry, yeah.
Denise Michelle here. By collectors, do you mean who would hold the money or who would execute the transaction?
Who would collect the funds from the party that opted in to the at-large community?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it would be the at-large supporting organization.
So you will not be looking to the registrants or the registrar community to collect it on behalf of that community, or will you?
Yes.
Right, yeah, we have been examining two scenarios there, one of which would entail a complete integration into the domain name registration and renewal process. And those discussions continue. We've gotten some very useful input, and one of the implementation issues going forward that the study committee wants to continue to work on is exactly this issue. So we don't have a definitive answer.
Thank you.
Yeah, this has been, to add to that, I mean, you've got two mechanisms, one of which is have a third party collect the money, and the benefits of doing that is that you'd have a designated third party explicitly doing so. Obviously, there's a much more involved mechanism, which would require the extremely active participant and support of the registrar and integrating their systems. And as you know, there are many, many different kinds of systems out there. These registrars are very pressured for time and resources. Furthermore, there are concerns with respect to having these third parties collect the money and how that's treated and monitored, be it the registrars or be it this third party. So there's plenty of outstanding issues there, but essentially there's two models. Is it going to be explicitly one or the other, or a mixture of both? I think that's still open.
Okay, YJ, then I'm going to say this is the last question. Thank you.
Okay, actually I understand these realistic restrictions to define enlarged members as domain name holders, but can we just look around this room for a while? And as far as I know, these are the people who have been using the internet, so that's why they sort of claim the rights to be involved with this policymaking process. But these are the people, 5% of the world population. So when we do this kind of whole infrastructure process, we really have to be, that kind of infrastructure needs to be very open and inclusive to have the latecomers who definitely wanted to be involved with this process. And my interpretation of enlarged directors is the sort of that kind of functional place which can observe all those opinions from the people who have some ideas and who have some opinions to be involved with. So that's why, even though we do understand sympathetically the kind of financial restriction and all those realistic sort of constraints we do have, we do not have to give up all those open processes, which should include all those participation from 95% from the all of the world. So can you please look into whether that study committee can accommodate to have that the rest of the world's participation in the future, because this entity should not be criticized as sort of the small group which tried to impose the policies the rest of the world.
Yeah, and that goes back to the issue of the sort of the plus and the plus plus, or the plus plus issues, where we would like to see further development of thoughts along these lines. I think we need the domain name, individual domain names, as the core structure. We don't, we haven't find any found any other core structure that is viable. And this gives sort of a theoretical electorate of 40 million, where you go for sort of email, probably in the order of half a billion. There are quite a lot of things that can be done in order to have other mechanisms for opting into being part of the electorate. Providing that it meets the criteria of being implementable and being possible to finance. And we indicate some solutions or some avenues of approach in our report, and we invite further work on that. That's going to be on the agenda of the sort of the at large supporting organization, preparatory committee, or whatever we call it, that we have called for being established. Sorry? Yeah, and then, as Denise pointed out, I mean, this applies really to the core structure, the elections, but then participation in the work of the large support organization, which I envisage meetings and a lot of online, should of course be open to everyone. But for the voting structures, you need to have something that finances the entire thing, and then you need to have some sort of structure, and this is how we see it. But a core person from our side, an evolutionary approach, and technology is likely to evolve. So what we are saying is implementable today might be, I'm quite certain it's going to be implementable 3 or 4 years from now as well, but there might be other things that takes us further on that are going to be implementable a couple of years down the road that can go in this particular direction.
Carl and the committee, I'd like to, we have to end it there, I'm afraid, because of time. I'd like to say thank you once again for coming to join us on council and engage in this debate. And I think it's clear for all of us that where we were was not a place we wished to be, and I think where you're suggesting we go has great merit. Clearly there are issues of detail that need to be worked on, and indeed many of those issues that you discussed on your committee and come up with particular recommendations. And we look forward very much to working with you and your successor organizing committees on this issue. Thank you once again.
Thanks very much, and let me just add that we are, of course, here, which means that others can, we can talk.
Talk separate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Exactly. You're here at 6, is it? You're back here at 6, something like that?
Yeah, but then we are here during these days.
During the days as well.
So we are open, and we need the input on these other technical and other issues and your assistance, so we welcome it.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Thank you. Right, then we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is transfers. This was initially on the agenda as a potential resolution, although I think events may have changed that for us, but Marilyn can explain where we are now.
Philip, I'm sorry, could I just clarify, we had an exchange on this. The amount of time that you've allocated for this discussion originally was considerably longer on the assumption that there was a report from the task force with a substantive recommendation. Evidently that's changed, and you indicated that there was that the original time allocation was based on that earlier assumption. But do you have an amount of time for this discussion in mind?
Well, you may have noticed I've already taken 20 minutes away from it by the discussion we've had with that large.
Thank you. My report is going to be really a summary of actions to date and looking forward. I'm acting as the interim chair to the Transfers Task Force, and just do a couple of quick minutes on the history of this. I think that most of us will remember that beginning in March 2001, there began to be some problems identified within the registrar constituency itself on the issues related to when and how the transfer of domain names between registrars happened, when transfers did happen, when they didn't happen, why denials happened. And the registrar constituency, working among itself, did respond to these concerns by developing a fairly extensive process, a set of principles, an identified process that they have published and taken a vote on that is to offer the guidance for the authoritative interpretation of Exhibit B on the policy on transfers of sponsorship of registrations between registrars. The process has not yet been fully implemented across all of the accredited registrars. We are talking about the generic TLDs in this discussion, and I think it's important to just point that out. And I won't really dwell on that again, but this, the discussion about transfers is within the generic TLDs. The discussion has come to the attention of some of the other constituencies, and the constituencies have asked to participate in and provide comments on the process to ensure that the impact on them as users, or perhaps them if they are the registries, is also, or ISPs, is also taken into account. So in at the October 11 meeting, the Names Council created the Fast Track Task Force, and we were asked to provide a report at the Marina Del Rey meeting. We had asked to, and I agreed to take the interim chair, we had asked for the constituencies to name representatives. Events have interfered with that happening, and in the interim, what we have done is to name all of the members of the Names Council to a listserv so that you have to opt out if you don't intend to be on this task force. We've also asked Danny Younger as the GA chair to be a member of the task force. We subsequently posted a terms of reference document which is open for comment, and the registrar constituency and individual registrars provided an educational briefing for representatives of the Names Council and the GA regarding both the issues and different perspectives. The registrar constituency has acknowledged that there is significant additional work to be done, and they are committed to the further examination of the remaining issues in order to deal with a procedure that's agreed to that helps to ensure the and facilitate the transfer of domain names between what I call the transferring and the receiving registrar. The registrars refer to this as the losing and gaining registrar, but wearing a user hat, most holders of domain names think about this from their perspective, and that is that the name is being transferred from one registrar to a receiving registrar. It seems a small change, but it really does, I think, reflect a more of a user perspective in thinking about the impact of the processes that are put in place. At this point, we have not been able to conclude enough of our work to put forward a resolution, and my recommendation is the task force continue and that we put together a accelerated, continue to work as we have been and put together an accelerated work plan, report in December on the status and plan to conclude the work of the task force in Ghana at the time of the next meeting. We also will be taking consultation with the ICANN legal counsel on the any legal definitions, such as the term of apparent authority, and ensuring that there is ongoing feedback between the task force representatives and the other constituencies for input.
Okay, so you're suggesting, because the task force that you had was an interim task force, and you're suggesting that you certainly need at least another month to come to the resolution and then to be ongoing until Ghana, which sounds very sensible. That still leaves open the question of participation in the constituency, in the task force. And that's something I think that we'd like to resolve quickly. It's it may be impractical to try to get everybody involved, but it doesn't actually help too much when you get down to discussion and detail and buy-in.
Can I ask Roger, two procedural questions? First, which constituencies have refused to designate participants for the task force? And second, do we have a precedent in previous task forces where there's been a failure on the part of constituencies to designate representatives, and if so, does anyone have a recollection what we've done under those circumstances? If the situation has arisen, I'm not sure it has, what we've done.
Constituencies have been slow to designate, I think, in the past, we could say. But Milton, you have a comment to make on this, Ryan?
We have conscripted them.
Oh, yeah. So the Milton solution is a different script. It clearly needs to be resolved. It may be that constituencies could nominate around this table who they wish to involve in that, or...
I think we should just be consistent with whatever our normal practice is. This, I don't think, is the first time we've had a problem getting constituencies to designate somebody.
Normal practice has been a period of a week or two to nominate by email.
Ken.
Well, first of all, I'd like to compliment Marilyn because she's worked very hard to reach out to try to get the involvement from the constituencies. Secondly, I'd like to say that I have a very simple philosophy with that. Everybody here's on notice. If your constituency isn't willing or interested in participating, then if you'll pardon the expression, I would like not to hear any pissing and moaning over whatever the end result would be. Because I think from a practical standpoint, we're really trying very hard to get something accomplished here. And there may just be some people who feel that it's of no real particular interest to them. And if so, then if you want to stay on the side, then just stay on the side. Don't come in at the end and complain about being disenfranchised. That's all.
Ken, just to be clear, I have no problem with that whatsoever. I'm only suggesting that we be if that's our approach to task forces where constituencies fail to appoint people, then that should be our normal approach.
I agree with you. I'm not contesting with you. I'm just expressing concern about the fact that there shouldn't be that ambivalent factor in here.
Philip?
Carolina.
I just want to make sure I understand the time frame and what the end result is. Is the idea, since we've seen kind of that the registrar has this document that has a proposal in it, is the idea that the task force would obviously review it, but maybe use that, and at the end of the day, before Ghana, there'll be something like that, which is a process that we would be proposing that all ICANN-accredited registrars would follow?
Yeah, I think that's right, Carolyn. I think we also need to identify, there are some areas that are a bit unclear, and let me explain one that comes to my mind that I think more work is needed, and the input of the other constituencies is particularly needed on. My estimates, and the registrars and registries would know this better than I do, but my estimates are that 70% of people who register domain names today do so indirectly. They do so through some form of an agent, whether it's an ISP, a corporate registrar, some other entity, and they themselves are often quite unaware of who their domain name is registered with, and they in fact may choose that to be the case. That is certainly the case for my domain name. I'm perfectly happy with the gentleman I delegated that responsibility to, and I hope he doesn't bother me about that particular issue, but I delegated that authority to him, and I did so knowingly. Many people did not understand that decision needed to be made. So if you're the registry or the registrar and you're looking downstream and much of your communication is through an intermediary, you have to also understand what kind of communication that intermediary may be having with the person they think is their client. So I think part of this discussion may be if any changes are needed in procedures that an ISP put in place with their client, for instance, or a corporate registrar put in place with their client base, there should be an understanding of the impact of these changes. That, I think, is relatively straightforward. It may be a bit detailed to work through, but it shouldn't be controversial. It should just be a question of being able to talk about it. And it hasn't yet, as far as I can see, just been fleshed out enough. But I don't consider that one of the areas of controversy at all, but just one of the areas of the work effort.
I think the other substantial sort of open area is the issue of enforcement. And again, I don't think that there's a broad disagreement. It just hasn't been nailed down yet.
Okay, Paul Kane.
Just, I appreciate many council members participated in the recent telephone conference. This debate has been going on since March of this year, and it would be very beneficial, I believe, to both the registrant community and the registrar community if the council could emphasize the importance of bringing this issue to a close, to a resolution and a close. And it may be appropriate, and I'm not sure, and I'll be guided by those of you in Los Angeles, if indeed a motion is placed before the council that basically highlights the importance of this issue. It's important to the registrants that want to know when they have registered a name, the registrar, that they can either give consent to their registrar to lock the name, registrar lock is the term, with their registrar of choice, or if they want to move their name to a registrar who better serves their needs, they should be free to do so. And there have been a reasonable number, I would almost say a significant number, of complaints to the gaming registrar that the name to which the registrar to which the name is being transferred. Basically, the registrant saying, I have asked you to obtain my name from the my earlier registrar. Why haven't you done so? I have paid a fee. I wish to initiate that straight away. And so it would, whilst I appreciate additional work needs to be done in this area by the task force, and I commend the task force for the work they have done so far, it may be appropriate to pass a motion just encouraging ICANN staff to give assistance to the task force to try and bring this matter to resolution. But as I say, I'll be guided by you in LA.
Okay, Paul, thank you for that. I would agree with your opening remark there in terms of the importance to bring this issue to resolution, as I think it's something that's been around a little longer than we would have liked on the Names Council. Tony.
Thank you. Again, I'd like to bring it to the attention of the Names Council that this was discussed once more in the ISPCP meeting earlier today. And we will be issuing a communique on that, but I'd just like to pick out a few points from that are particularly pertinent to this discussion. The ISPs support the need for the task force to continue its work, and we recognise that representation from all constituencies should be sought, but it must not be viewed as an argument that the process is inhibited if that isn't achieved. But one of the main things that came out of our debates was a very strong view that during this meeting there should be a move to set key milestones for the task force, and that the task force itself should then be asked to complete all of their work within the next 3 months, and the life of the task force should only be extended beyond 3 months under very exceptional circumstances.
I think that sounds like a very sensible suggestion. I mean, Marilyn, you were saying earlier that your current target anyway is to produce a resolution to come to the next Names Council meeting, which will be December, and then working to completion by Ghana, which is about right for what Tony's suggesting as we recommend as a council, yes?
Yes, that's right. I am, however, going to ask the members of the NC to give thought to something that I've observed. I think our practice now is to have one person from a constituency per task force. I think that we should really think about whether we need to be flexible if a constituency feels the need to have two people on the task force, as long as it is, if we vote, it's a single vote. But I know that in some constituencies there may be differing perspectives that the constituency feels the need to ensure are represented, and I would just like to ask the Names Council very briefly to comment on that.
Richard.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, our constituency is split on this issue currently, and so we would have difficulty with one representative.
Milton?
Yes, we agree that it is good to have the flexibility to have additional representation, and the constituency definitely should have its act together enough to designate a voting member. And that will, of course, have to be an exclusive without, you know, skewing the votes. The point I think that Tony made deserves consideration, that you shouldn't Given proper announcement of the inauguration of task forces and the steps to create the task force and some checks on abuse of the process, if constituencies do not designate their voting members or do not appoint people at all, then the task force should be able to go ahead. On the .org task force, the ISPs specifically said, we don't want to be part of it, so we went ahead.
Well, just to reiterate, I have no difficulty with that, and what Milton is really saying is that there is a precedent that we are evolving a practice here in which we consistently, sort of don't accommodate those constituencies who don't care to participate, and I have no problem doing that with this task force. I think we should simply recognize that this is an evolving council practice, and after whatever cajoling the chair can do, if a constituency refuses to participate, then it doesn't sound unreasonable to me that we would proceed. I did want to comment briefly on Carolyn's point, and only to the extent that it illustrates the complexity of this issue, and that is the original concept that underlied the registrar accreditation agreements and the structure that flowed from them was that there would be a relationship between registrars and registrants. Whether that was a correct forecast or not, the contractual structure was created that registrants would have to explicitly give a power of attorney to a third party or something equivalent to it in order for the third party to represent them to a registrant. And that was because it was assumed that there'd be a relationship between registrars and registrants as part of the sort of fabric that tied all this together. Marilyn's point was to suggest that, well, that may not be the reality that exists today. There may be some hybrid in which registrants don't give a full power of attorney to a registrant. For example, they can't sell the domain name to somebody else, but they give sort of an implied, partial, qualified power of attorney under certain circumstances to a registrar. And maybe that exists, but it needs to be carefully legally defined. It's not something you can sort of say, well, I thought I gave him authority to do something, but maybe I didn't. And so there's a good deal of work that the task force needs to do to specify exactly what legal authorities exist or don't exist, or we could have a chaotic situation in which one registrar says, I have the right to sell all these names because the intermediary told me that I could sell the names, and the registrant say, nobody gave you that right. Show me where it's written that you have that right. So the process needs to, whatever comes out of the process needs to be carefully documented.
And I was going to say, I raised even the question, one, just to understand what the deliverable was, but also, I mean, in our own IT meeting, there was this talk about kind of the painful process when the transfers don't work, but also, to what extent there should be uniformity at the registrar level. I don't know, that's why I asked what your deliverable was. Was it something that was going to then be imposed on everyone the same way, or was there still going to be flexibility in the way that different registrars might want to treat the transfer issue?
Sure. And on the I think on the general point in terms of representation and voting, I think it's important that constituencies do agree to have typically one representative. If observer is necessary, then I think that's also fine too. If it can't be agreed how your voting representative should vote, that's fine. They can give an instruction to abstain. That may be the way that has to go forward. But I think that should be the way that things are in general. Peter?
I just wanted to make a comment but with regard to what you're talking about right there, Philip. Also, Roger, you've said twice the constituency refuses or might refuse to participate. No constituency is actually refusing. They may be abstaining, or they may be feel the issue is not germane to them. However, we do have this ICANN bylaw situation that says that there has to be a two-thirds vote of the Names Council members to forward a consensus-based recommendation. So rather than get into this refusing situation, if we turn those into abstentions, it would seem that according to our voting rules, if we get enough people abstaining, there will not be a consensus recommendation to forward.
Richard, do you want to speak?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a small point because in a couple of previous discussions, I heard the term used to sell the name. I just want to make sure we all understand that we're not talking about transfers of ownership here at all. We're talking about transfers with the existing owner between registrars.
Okay, other comments on that? I think Paul Kane wants to make a comment. So, Paul, go ahead.
Yes, just following up really on what Peter DeBlanc indicated, that's a very fair point. We have been waiting on some registrars expressing their interest in this area, and even some registrars have been, let's say, slow at presenting their papers. One thing I would like to highlight is this issue is important to, I believe, all constituencies, and as has already been indicated, even if the representative that is on the task force would like to have others supporting them, the work of the task force is archived online via the DNSO site. And so the process is indeed open to all parties who are interested. And even if one is not the designated representative, I would encourage the constituency members to speak to their representative to make sure their views are heard. I would like to propose a motion, a relatively simple motion, not a resolution, because there is so much work yet to be done, that the Names Council shows its support for the work of the Transfer Task Force and requests that ICANN staff assist in any legal definition and in the identification of any contractual modifications, as Roger indicated, in the ICANN accreditation agreement, for example, and highlight the fact that this matter should come to resolution at the GAN or March 2000 two meeting. I don't know if, I mean, I can tidy that up to a proper motion if you wish, but I do believe we need to emphasize the importance of bringing this matter to conclusion. If someone wants to second or support that idea, I'll draft a better motion, but I'll be going away.
Okay. Paul was saying, do we want, basically proposing a motion to say that the NC shows its support for the Transfer Task Force, the importance of its work, but also suggesting that we request ICANN staff to assist in work on legal definitions and identification of contract modification. And the final part of that was a timing element to say completion by the GANA meeting, which is what we were echoing earlier from and Tony and Marilyn's proposals anyway for the...
Have they not done... is there a need to... It just strikes me that it seems sort of redundant to ask the ICANN staff to help out. I assume that they've done it, but if they haven't done it, then we should... And you feel there's a need to ask them to do it, then we should ask them to.
Marilyn, is there a need to ask them?
I think that it is useful to ask the staff to advise us on this. Although I think I heard Paul's motion actually being... focused on a different point, that certainly in the motion there was included the point of asking the ICANN staff for help, but I think what Paul was conveying in his motion is encouraging, and Paul helped me out on this, encouraging the Names Council to reinforce the importance of the task force's work and the urgency of the task force's work. Paul, am I right about that?
Yeah, that's the intent, yeah. But also there are agreements in place with registrars, the ICANN accreditation agreement, the registrar agreement, where there is already existing wording in the contract making reference to transfers, but it's very ambiguous. And so it may be that clarification by ICANN staff would be helpful. And Philip, in answer to your question, I believe it helps ICANN if a specific request is made from the Names Council inviting ICANN staff to participate.
Yeah, that's actually quite a good point, Paul, because as we know, ICANN staff are busy people.
Yeah.
Do you want more discussion, Council, on this motion, or are we all basically supportive of what he's saying? I think we are basically supportive. Can I have a seconder for the motion, and then I'm going to ask Paul to rephrase the motion so it's clear for the minutes.
I'll second the motion. That's great, yeah.
And that's Richard seconding it. Was that Grant seconding it?
It was.
Excellent, Grant. On the basis of participation or equity, we'll have you a seconder. Thank you very much for participation. Paul, are you ready to phrase the motion formally for us?
I will try and tidy something up. I hereby move a motion that the Mains Council shows its support for the transfer task force and the importance of its work. The Mains Council requests ICANN staff assist the task force in any legal definitions and the identification of any contract modifications that may be needed. The Mains Council looks forward to receiving a resolution of this important issue by the Ghana meeting, brackets, whatever the date the Ghana meeting is, just in case the meeting is delayed or deferred or doesn't happen in Ghana.
Sure. Okay, Paul, thank you very much for the motion. Paul is moving the motion. It's seconded by Grant Forsyth. Those in favour, please say aye.
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 Those against, please say no. Those wishing to abstain, please say abstain. Okay, the motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much. We'll move on to the next point on the agenda, which is a short report from Elizabeth concerning the IDN task force.
It's on? No?
Okay.
Oh. Okay. The international domain names are coming. And we have been facing since several months various information on implementations arriving and feeling that whereas there's a lot of programs being done, it is not yet. The Names Council Task Force on International Domain Names resolved recently to make some progress on better understanding and to identify consequences which we are going to have to the current situation with introduction to international domain names. It will be a dramatic change. The questions which arise are we going to see the end of harmony between applications? As of today, when you have a domain name, you have simultaneously email functioning with this domain name, FTP functioning with the domain names, WHOIS query functioning with the domain names. How things are going to evolve with introduction of international domain names. When we receive somewhat contradictory information, some information provided indicate that web browsing website will work with international domain names under specific conditions, but not email, not FTP, not WHOIS query. What modification, assume that it is true, what modification will be required on the end user browser application, what modifications will be required on domain names resolution to have this first step to introduction of international domain names arriving. So we need to understand better. We need to identify what I call identify consequences to the current situation. There is also another question which arises when we speak about international domain names. Is this GTLD and CCTLD space going to provide the same international domain names with the same encoding? For myself, it is not absolutely clear that it must be the same. What happened if the chosen situation will be different? And how to achieve the coordination between CCTLD and GTLD.
It may happen that everything will go smoothly, but it is not necessarily true. Another question which arises is how many applications will work with this introduction of international domain names. The variety of products and interoperability is between them are necessary for competition at application level. And are the market forces sufficient at this stage? Are we going to have more than one browser working on more than one operating system? And does it matter? Eventually, with a colleague from the IDN task forces, we are scheduling a teleconference to be held somewhere between 26th of November and December 4th. And over these teleconferences, we will have some information, clarification provided by three different sites, from VeriSign, from Mink, and from someone from IETF. It is my hope that with this better understanding of consequences, the IDN task forces will be able to maybe provide some advices on IDN international domain names deployment. Thank you.
Elizabeth, thanks very much. What you seem to be saying is a lot of what you're doing now, of course, is information gathering in terms of trying to assess the implications of various commercial proposals, the test beds that we're hearing about, and that sort of thing. Do you think that it would help at some time also for the council themselves to be better informed on this matter and on other people that through the task force you can identify perhaps that we should think about perhaps for the Ghana meeting to address that?
Well, it may happen that it would be useful. Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, first we will try to understand it probably in the smaller committee, and I believe that if we subsequently we will share this information with the names council. It is extremely important to understand what is going to happen. The people are going to use these new characters, new possibility, typed names, typed email addresses. It will not work. It will add some traffic. The people are going to be frustrated, and we need to deal with the situation. I believe that it will not be possible to have just a smooth implementation. All of a sudden, everything is going to work. So we need to face the situation when we are going to have things half done, half not yet, and to simply inform everybody is the best solution.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, previously, the task force had been working on a resolution which was subsequently withdrawn because external events had changed. Is there a need for you to work on another resolution to bring that to the Names Council at some point in time, or have things changed at the moment that's not necessary?
I believe that it was wise to wait the better understanding, and I have some hopes with this teleconference, series of teleconferences, and then if the resolution is necessary, if the information we are going to bring to the Names Council are that the IDN deployment will possibly not be rather on positive side but or negative side, we will try to see if it is appropriate to draft a resolution.
Sure. Okay. Milton, you have a question.
Yeah, I'm just totally confused about the IDN situation.
Number one, somebody has to explain to me what is ICANN's policy role in IDNs? What exactly is our leverage? What is it supposed to be? What do we think it is? Secondly, we went through a situation here where a resolution appeared on one day, some modifications were made on day two, and we received a ballot in our mailbox on day three. This is not what I call a consensus development process. And the fact that we're having fundamental debates about what authority ICANN has contractually to deal with this issue was in particularly troubling. Can somebody answer my question? And then, of course, the resolution was withdrawn. And so maybe somebody could explain to me first what was really going on there, and secondly, what authority does ICANN have over internationalized domain names? We certainly do not set the standards. That's IETF. Seems like the marketplace sort of determines who implements and adopts these things. So what exactly is our role here? Can somebody tell me that?
Okay. I've got Paul and Marilyn also in the queue, and then also looks like Richard. Just on the process issue, I think the task force was actually responding to the Names Council request to bring something before us in a given time frame. I think that's what happened. It may have been shorter than we would otherwise have liked, but there was a set time frame that we had asked the task force to work towards, and therefore the normal way we outreach and discuss all of these things was clearly not able to be operated then. I think the wider question in terms of ICANN's whole policy involvement, I will ask Elizabeth to address in a second. Let's just take these other questions first. It may help in terms of responses. Paul first, and then Marilyn.
Thank you. Milton raised some of the questions I was hoping to raise. But really, this is a question for Roger. Enlightening the council as to what are the envisaged time scales for the VeriSign international testbed rollout, and also if the other, the new top-level domain registries are considering introducing international domain names in a similar time frame.
Okay, Marilyn, make your point.
I actually am going to respond to Milton's question about whether or not ICANN has any legitimate role in dealing with international domain names. And my observation would be, as a user, I'm under the impression that those names will ultimately be a part of the DNS, we certainly hope, and that there will be resolution of international domain names in an interoperable fashion so that we do not have balkanization and bifurcation of the communication on the Internet. I think that ICANN does have a role in trying to ensure that the stability of the Internet is not threatened or limited or damaged as we try to bring these new enhancements in functionality into the DNS. So what may not be, maybe we haven't thought through every aspect of ICANN's role. ICANN has an overall responsibility for the stability and reliability of the Internet, and multilingual names, international domain names, offer a significant enhancement to millions of users who may not today find the Internet that friendly a space. I hope we're going to help to change that.
Richard? Respond to any comments you've heard so far. If we can knock them off as we go around the table, then that's even better.
Or ask a question. Well, I think we're going to support the question. Paul asked a question. Do we need to answer that? Or?
Yes, you can ask that. If you want.
Okay. Well, I think he asked Chris what they're doing.
Oh, okay. He wants Bruce to respond to that. You're right. Yeah.
Well,
okay.
He asked us too. So, what did you go first?
If I understood Paul King's question. He was asking about the VeriSign Registry's multilingual testbed. The VeriSign multilingual testbed is one of about a dozen registries that are offering international domain name services today. Most of the others have no contractual relationship with ICANN, so they operate outside of the ICANN system. When the VeriSign Registry announced the testbed, about a year ago, it indicated that it was going to move as quickly as it could through various test phases in the test bed, concluding with a resolution phase when the multilingual registrations would be fully resolvable. In other words, when you input it, it would resolve to the website that you were seeking to find. We have not implemented the resolution phase yet, but as we indicated last year when we launched the service, we're going to do so as quickly as possible, and I think our most recent statement indicated that would come sometime in the next few months.
Okay. So, and to respond to the second part of Paul's question, the new TLDs, you know, all our contracts are the same on this. We will launch a multilingual .info or .biz or whatever it may be consistent with ICANN policy. I think that's what our contract says, and there's probably 20 attorneys in the room that will clarify that. But so we'll do what we're told kind of thing. But I'd kind of like to jump back to Milton's overarching question, and that is, you know, what's your authority here? It seems to me, Milton, there's sort of, there's two things that the community can do here. Everyone can stop what they're doing, and we can agree on a technical standard, and then we can all launch products that work, and email works, and Whois works, and FTP works, and they resolve the same way, and there's some sort of consistency of intellectual property protection. Or the market forces can jump in, as they are doing to some extent now, and you know, the market may determine which way it eventually goes. I think Marilyn's concern is that there will be a lot of casualties from that. Probably another concern is that there may be a dominant player in the market who has the ability to force the standards in a particular direction by virtue of a preponderance of existing domain names. So that's my read on the 20,000 foot on that.
Okay, Grant and then YJ.
Philip, I'd just like to again also address Milton's concern, and that is that I would hope that the real contribution that ICANN has in a discussion like this is that in its policy role, it is choosing to exercise some leadership, and in this particular case, some cautionary leadership. And by signaling to the market that it, ICANN, the community, has yet not decided on a particular preferred standard, and also signaling that it would choose to support a common standard, that those signals transferred to the market will caution users in being rushed into some, you know, commercially released quick-to-market solution. But it's entirely up to the consumer in the end. And I would caveat that, other than those of a GTLD, to make whatever choice they like. But I think our role here, and ICANN, is in fact to as I say, exercise that leadership role in policy.
Thank you, Grant. YJ.
First, okay. First, I wanted to ask Elizabeth, the chair of this task force. As past chair of that task force, I wanted to ask whether Elizabeth is referring to the terms of reference which was adopted by the Names Council meeting in Stockholm. Have you seen the terms of reference for this task force?
I received, when you were chairing the task force, you sent, I believe, two messages to the list, and I remember at that time I was looking on your report.
Well, actually, I think at that time the CCTLD participant from was Oscar rather than Elizabeth, probably, so you may not see what the terms of reference was like, but according to the terms of reference of this ICANN task force was, this ICANN task force was to partner with the existing language communities who have been building up their expertise about these issues. As I updated or made a report during the Stockholm meeting, there are bodies who have been working on these kinds of issues, including Mink, AINC, Ondo's Chinese groups, and others, and which this community need to respect. And ICANN may play some kind of leadership role, since this is the body which has some responsibility for the root servers, but the attitude should be this kind of consultation rather than dictation, because this kind of efforts made by self-organized rather than by dictators. So I think, and those sort of efforts is trying to bring those names which is associated with culture and their languages in the cyberspace, which cannot be dominated by somebody else who doesn't have any kind of expertise in those languages and cultures. So that's why, and another issue which Elizabeth has been raising here is, I can tell you those technical issues have been covered by ICIP, Aiden Working Group, which ICON DNSO don't have to really look into, but probably DNSO can be updated about what is the current situation. And another aspect is, this IDEN efforts needs to be encouraged rather than being discouraged, because this is sort of like one of pioneering efforts from the internet community who wanted to expand their own cyberspace, which should not be regulated, which should not be discouraged by any kind of policies which doesn't really include their own participation. Please look at this place. Is there anybody who just can speak on their own language issues in this place? Elizabeth, can you understand the Chinese issues? Can you understand the Arabic issues? Can you understand the Russian issues? How can you decide to dictate all those people without any kind of expertise about those culture and language with this group? And I think this group really have to consider to change the work attitude. I'm not saying here not to work this group, but I mean, as part of NIMS Council member, I was willing to bring this issue to ICANN because, as you told us, these whole issues need a lot of coordination among all those relevant bodies, like even GTLDs and CCTLDs. Without any coordination, the internet might be balkanized, as pointed by Melvin, which nobody wants in this internet community. But if that was confirmed, you also have to respect those people who doesn't have any willingness to hurt the stability of the current internet.
What do you think so, for that? Caroline?
I have a quick question for Elizabeth. One of the reasons the resolution was withdrawn was that I guess we're kind of waiting for the IETF to come up with a finalized standard, and I was wondering if you knew what the timetable for that was.
I decided we received thanks to Kent just providing us some copy from messages circulating on other lists that the entering of this international domain names, the resolution of international domain names, has been postponed slightly, and therefore I didn't find the necessity to continue the motion. Everything was done in a rush. And
I'm just asking if you know, though. I think one of the issues that we're concerned is that there be this final kind of standard so that whoever, when we roll them out, that it is in conformance with IETF. And my understanding
is the IETF still did not yet terminate the work.
What do you know? Do you have an idea of where they are?
I've been calling my ITF colleagues, and I've been looking on the mailing list, and I've been also discussing with YJ and several colleagues. So IETF did not yet terminate the work, and IETF cannot terminate that work without the input from people speaking Chinese, Korean, Japanese, all these languages. So this work is still in progress, and it is difficult. I do hope it will be done one day, and then we will continue it probably a little bit slower. It is not an issue, YJ is correct, to be dealt in rush. It is not really appropriate, and we felt that at one moment that the pressure started to become too strong, and it was rather inappropriate.
Okay, Elizabeth, thanks so much. I have a huge queue of council speakers, and also somebody who wants to speak just on the floor in a moment, which we don't normally take at this point in council meetings, more reserved for GA, but we may come back to you, sir, if we have
time. Trying to answer the question that Ellen...
At the end of the meeting. Paul, could I take your comment first? As I said, this is mostly a discussion item, because we're not leading to a motion or resolution here, so please be aware, Council, we are taking time away from other matters. Paul.
Just a very quick issue. One of my concerns, or I think a registrar concern, is that consumers will anticipate, when the international domain names are introduced, the same functionality as available in the ASCII environment. And as YJ correctly pointed out, us involved in ASCII, in the ASCII world, are not frequently aware of issues in other scripts environments. My concern is, from a registrar perspective, registrars will incur phenomenal costs in trying to allay or inform registrants either that the name does not function in the same way as the ASCII, or they have bought a domain that doesn't function at all. There are multiple browsers in the marketplace, and one needs to make sure that applications other than web, such as email, FTP, Telnet, etc., are indeed addressed, such that the consumer confidence in the domain name system is maintained, so all, both registries, registrars, can offer as many names as possible to satisfy the amazing demand there is out there for multilingual names. So I again would just like to highlight the need really for there to be a standards process based on applications being able to review the standard and introduce applications based on the standard, such that one doesn't need to have a proprietary solution and make sure that the recipient of a communication also uses that same proprietary solution. One needs an open source, open access, open who is environment to maintain consumer confidence in the multilingual domain space. Thank you.
Richard and then Ken.
Okay, so I want to just try and address Caroline's question, which is the $64,000 question, right? When is there going to be a standard? Because when there is, this is not a problem as much. At least we have a consistent path. So, you know, what I'm hearing from the technical experts that I sometimes hear from, it varies dramatically, I must say. And I think maybe someone from the floor is going to address this in a minute, but I hear as short as a few months. I hear other people say 12 months, 18 months. I think Ken's got a sensible recommendation next on maybe getting it from the horse's mouth.
Well, basically what I'm going to ask the council to do is to extend an invitation to the IETF to provide a representative to us at our next Names Council teleconference. I'm certain that they have a working group going with this, and I'm sure that the group can find somebody who could explain it to me at my dumbed down level. I apologize, but I think it's important for us at this point in time, rather than just hypothesizing where they are, to get it right straight from the horse. So I would hope that they could do that. I know there are members of the IETF, including members of that specific task force, who are in this room, so maybe they could make arrangements to work with us on this issue.
Ken, I think that's an excellent suggestion, and I'd very much like to leave this topic here now, as we also have some external people, I think, joining us. But Roger, you want to quickly?
Very, very briefly, I don't want to say we've just spent the last 20 minutes coming right back to where we started, but Elizabeth at the beginning indicated that when the task force was having its next meeting, it was going to hear from the IETF on this question, and I concur with Richard's observation that at least the people I speak with in response to Carolyn's question estimate that the time it will take the IETF to complete its standards work in this area could be as short as 6 months and as long as 2 or more years. So take your estimate, but I think the most important thing is that the task force is going to hear directly from the IETF on this point and will better educate itself on the evolution of standards, which I think everyone associated with ICANN at least supports.
You're listening to make a last comment, so please do it briefly.
Thank you. Actually, I just wanted to make one correction about the Elizabeth's report, because according to Elizabeth's report, interoperability is the area of the IETF, which was clarified by IETF that is not the area of the IETF. So there are some groups who already expressed to take actions about the interoperability testing of the multilingual domain names.
If Okay. Thanks very much. We need to move on to the next item now, and as we lost a little bit of time on the last item, and we have some members of the GAC joining us, I'm going to move on to and skip two items, which we'll return to, and move back and move on to the item to do with the GAC and the resolution that you remember we made following the GAC resolution concerning the reservation of names. Council members will have seen the statement the GAC made in response to that, and we thought it would be useful to have a discussion about that to try to see where there are areas of agreement and areas of difference still remain. And I think, Christopher, you may want to introduce the GAC response to us first.
Good afternoon. Thanks, Philip. I just wanted to come and listen in on your discussion today. I think you had a discussion in a conference call. We read your commentary with interest and decided that it would be useful to put on record in a little bit greater detail the reasons for which the Governmental Advisory Committee felt that it was necessary on this occasion to provide a safety valve in the .info registry with the agreement of the ICANN board, who have supported in the GAC's recommendations for a temporary period, and incidentally with the agreement of the registry itself, FILIAS. So I'm glad to you've got our documents. I don't want to go into it in detail. There are three versions of it, one that you posted without footnotes, one that I posted with footnotes, and some people have even got a version with shiny links, but they all say the same thing. We do think it's necessary to have a holding phase, particularly for the highly sensitive country names. And I must say, most governments in the GAC, I think, would, had it been possible, would have wished to extend that principle to regional subdivisions and names of cities and so on. We have a big meeting coming up in the WIPO at the end of this month, which will discuss this in more detail, and GAC urged ICANN, and they agreed that it's necessary not to prejudice the future and to keep the options open for creating an additional opportunity for countries concerned to use their own names in .info. I'll stay at the mic in order to reply to
you. Yeah, Peter. Chris, for me, there were a couple of things within the response to the resolution, I think, which are probably quite comforting for the Council. Firstly, there was a clear statement that there was no retrospective implication for suppliers and users, and that was one thing that we're concerned with in terms of the breadth of some of the statements that were unclear in the earlier statement. And secondly, also the fact the clarification that you just hinted at now, which was this is for the moment specifically just for names of countries and nothing further, and indeed recognising the complications of going further. So I think that is already a degree of comfort probably to the Council. My question I think still remains and is also in your response really. And probably the difference of opinion is highlighted by the phrasing the special nature of .info. I think it may be that is where there is continued areas of disagreement, because we're in a continuity, if you like, where new names are happening. It may well be that this is much more to do with the timing of new names than the inherent qualities of .info. I don't know if you're able to comment on that, and if it's very much, you think, a response of the moment rather than something that is absolutely inherent to .info.
I think from the theoretical point of view, I could agree. And I recall that we raised this issue a year ago before we got into designating which names would be selected as the new top-level domain. How long it will take to create additional names and which ones should be used for what purposes, well, you all know that's a kind of debate that ICANN can spend a great deal of time over, and I think particularly given one or two precedents and one or two cases and disputes which have put governments in a very, very sensitive position, the feeling in the GAC was that this was the time to draw a small line in the sand and say that in .info, which after all means information, and that is a concept which is of great importance and value in language in general and in the internet in particular. So we decided to say what we said, and we will not make hostages to fortune for future names. I'm sure Andrew McLaughlin has a little list in his back pocket, but I don't know what's on it.
Okay, Council, let's take a discretion. Let's take a few names for the queue first. I have Marilyn, I have Roger. Anybody else at the moment? No? Okay, then in that order.
Christopher, my comment is really a question, if you might. Many of us are familiar with the previous work that the Standing Committee at WIPO undertook in terms of some previous work that was done, and there will be a meeting, as you mentioned, later in this month. Can you comment more on what you might expect? I mean, clearly WIPO works at the instruction of its member nations, and we all, those of us who are familiar with WIPO's processes, understand that it's a lengthy process very often to get concurrence on changes through the WIPO process. But can you comment on what you do expect to be undertaken in relation to this issue at that meeting?
Well, first of all, we have drawn the WIPO Secretariat's attention to the existence of this debate in ICANN and in the GAC, and I think the relevant documents, the board resolution, the original GAC position, the Names Council resolution, and the GAC response will be on the table in WIPO as working documents. I don't think I'm breaching any secrets by saying that WIPO is looking into the question as to whether ICANN could be an ad hoc accredited observer to the meeting in November. The GAC itself does not intend to take any further steps vis-a-vis WIPO, but its members will. If I take my GAC hat off for the moment and remind you that I represent the European Union in the GAC, the European Commission will prepare a working document for the for discussion on this particular point in the under the point of geographical identifiers, and I think we will probably suggest that first that there is in fact a stronger legal base than the WIPO final report suggests for protection of the way in which such names can be used, and in any case that should the need arise that such disposition should be somewhat strengthened in the foreseeable future. We tease the WIPO and the ITU and the GAC about how slow they are sometimes, but I think on this occasion WIPO will be under considerable incentive to move forward. I'd also recall that there are other categories of names which will be discussed, the non-proprietary pharmaceutical names, the names of intergovernmental organizations, for example.
Thank you, Christopher. I had two questions. One really repeats Philip's first question, but I need to just go back. In the report that the GAC posted, in Section 3 of the report, it describes the GAC communique as addressing primarily country names in .info. And I guess the question I have is to ask you to clarify what the modifier primarily means, because I think that, as Philip explained, that the council's concern was that the GAC was referring to not just country names, but also provincial names, municipal names, village names, town names, that the town of New Star, Canada, could preempt New Star Corporation for the name New Star on the internet. And I think the council was concerned about the scope of the GAC's interest in this subject. And I have to say, the language of the report as I read it, since it's referred to the GAC's interest, the GAC's communicator is referring to primarily country names and info, left me a little bit confused, because you did not say exclusively. Maybe so please clarify.
That's not confusing at all. The original GAC communique referred primarily to country names, but there was a final paragraph which was very important for many of our members, which warned the registrars and registrants that registration of many other categories of names were likely to give rise to disputes. And I'm afraid to say this has materialized. And in addition to the 327 names that are on the little list that Ophelius has published, and for which we are very grateful and appreciative, in addition to that list, there are hundreds of names which are going into the challenge process.
So I suspect there could be thousands of municipalities, villages, provinces, states.
Everything. It remains to be seen how strongly people feel about this. But some people feel intensely strongly that these names belong to the people of the municipalities and regions and
countries. If I could ask the second question, I was going to ask is the focus of the GAC's concern, it seems to me, could be in many areas, but two major ones occur to me. One is that the GAC's primary concern could be over something we in the United States call deceptive trade practice. In other words, I put up a website, America.info, and I pretend that I'm representing the government of the United States of America, and that's a deceptive activity, a deceptive use of the domain name. The second is the pure authority, regardless of whether I use it deceptively or honestly, that some government should have a preemptive right to take the domain name away from a commercial user, because even if the commercial user is saying this is for a restaurant or this is for a whatever business they have, the government can't preempt their right to use the name. Is the GAC's concern more about deception and cleaning up deceptive practices, or more about authority and making sure that governments have preemptive rights to use domain names?
I don't think GAC has not taken a view on that particular option. I think what I've observed is that you find both, and it depends to a large degree on the legislation and jurisprudence in the country concerned. There are some countries who, confronted with this problem, would say, well, that's something which we would have to deal with under passing off legislation, for example. There are other countries who believe that in their national laws, irrespective of international treaties or the Paris Convention or whatever, in their national laws, they do actually have higher levels of protection than would arise from passing off legislation. And there are, I believe Canada particularly considers that a few names are seriously protected under Canadian law, and other countries believe likewise. I personally have not yet, and as you know, I'm not a lawyer in these fields, but I personally have not yet seen a full inventory of all the national legislation that might be applicable. But I think it's one of the caveats that many of us have on the WIPO report, which only addressed the status of international law in this field, and that many governments believe that there are elements of national law which are equally applicable.
Okay, Paul Kane.
Where is he?
Thank you, Philip, and hello, Christopher.
One question. Why is it that the GAC communique refers only to the English names of countries rather than various languages? Obviously, each language has a unique way, or frequently a unique way, of referring to each country. But it seems that the GAC communique refers only to the English names.
No, Paul, that's not quite right. The communique refers to the name in English and in official languages in Latin characters. The reference to Latin characters being that the TLD and SLD codes, I believe, still only accommodate ASCII, which is what you were talking about a few minutes ago in IDN. So, for example, we believe that Luxembourgish is an official language in Luxembourg, and the name of Luxembourg in Luxembourgish is Lützeburg, and that name in Latin characters, without umlauts or accents, is protected. The name of Greece in Greek is Elas. You can't protect, you can't even enter Elas in the DNS in Greek character, but E-L-L-A-S should be on the list.
Okay, thank you. Richard, okay.
The thing I'm somewhat concerned about is that how far down the line do we go? And I will use as an example Geneva. I'm sure that there is very strong feeling in the Swiss government that Geneva is a unique identifier that should be the purview of that specific canton. If it is a canton, I apologize. At the same point in time, there are citizens of Geneva, Wisconsin, who may very well feel the same concerns. And I guess at some point in time, maybe what we need to do is take a look at the relationship of the identifier to where that identifier is most appropriate. In the case of Geneva, maybe it's most appropriate to the Swiss country code as opposed. So I'm somewhat concerned that as they move down, we're going to get into regional conflicts, and are we going to be trading off identifiers amongst countries? You know, I'll trade you this for that. And I'm not being cynical, I'm quite concerned about it because it lends a sense of instability, and that is that if the Geneva Watch Company spends a significant amount of time using an effort to brand their internet presence with Geneva.com or Geneva.info or wherever it may be, the concern that at some point in time they may lose this. Is there enough basis in intellectual property law so we don't run into these problems with the dispute? If so, the credibility of the dispute process can fall in.
Well, the GAC recommendation doesn't enter into that area. Those complexities are one of the major reasons why the final recommendation limited its scope to .info and to the ISO list. What we do in the future about those problems, I think you could reasonably debate in the NSO and in NEMS Council. It's a classic subject for your important entity. After all, it's not the first time that conflicts of names have had to be resolved. There are crude ways of doing it, like saying Geneva 1 and Geneva 2. There are more sophisticated ways of doing it by orienting commercial and products names towards one top-level domain and geographical concepts towards another top-level domain. There are ways of doing it by having generic second-level domains. I think it's John Clenson who, in a recent speech, pointed out to all of us that some of the problems that you've defined are a direct result of the fact that the DNS has resisted any hierarchy in in naming, whereas in all other environments there are hierarchies in naming which allow many names to coexist. But those are issues for the future, and I'm sure that the Names Council and DNSO will come to address them sooner or later.
Vanny, and then Caroline, and then Oscar.
Supporting Paul Kane's concern, in Latin characters there are different languages, including Spanish, and there are many countries in Spanish that you don't spell it in the same way as in English. For example, Turkish as Turquía, or the Jordan as Jordania, or I mean there are Russia as Russia, and I mean there are I can say many different examples, but I think there is an issue here because in Spanish also is written in Latin characters, and the GAC doesn't comprise those names in the list.
There's a good reason for that, Vanya, and I think it's important to clarify and recognize the limited framework within which we operate here. The ISO 3166, I'm sorry, I stumbled over that name a few seconds ago. The ISO 3166 code is written in English. And that is the code list of which the whole architecture, for better or worse, and bear in mind that there are quite increasing numbers of governments who are getting extremely fidgety with 3166 because it does not represent a rational architecture of geographical identifiers as the world, certainly the political and legal world, recognizes itself. But to start rewriting 3166 in lots of other languages, certainly on the Thursday night at 10:30 when the GAC finally finished its work on this point, that was beyond us.
How many countries of Spanish speaking, made input in this subject?
This was not raised in the GAC by the Spanish speaking countries. I think they recognized that there was to get the names in their in English and in their national languages was about as far as we could go on that occasion. However, the ICANN has set up a task force, of which I believe I'm going to become a member for my sins in this field, but there's a task force which is meeting on Thursday afternoon between ICANN and the GAC to begin to discuss the ways of implementing the ICANN board resolution. I suppose that sooner or later that task force might consider slightly broader issues, or at least insofar as we don't consider the broader issues, we would refer back to DNSO or the ICANN board those issues which we recognize as still being unresolved.
Thank you.
Okay, Caroline now, and then Oscar, and then Marilyn. We'll probably have to wrap up after that. Caroline.
Just a quick question, and kind of following up on Ken's point where he got into the trademarks. In the commentary, it talks about this reservation of these names, but it makes an exclusion unless they're registered by a valid trademark holder. And I was wondering, and I don't have the initial GAC resolution, is that something that GAC supports, or they haven't, or what their feeling is on such an exclusion of the reserve names?
I'm not quite sure that I've understood you.
The background and introduction section of the commentary, of the GAC commentary on our resolution.
Right.
I'm wondering what GAC feeling.
That is a reference to the policy statements made in the original Affilias Sunrise rules, which gave precedence to trademarks. First of all, there are few trademarks which, at least I hope, there are few trademarks that coincide exactly with the names of countries. But under these rules, the trademark owner would take precedence, but it would still be subject to UDRP if there was a dispute.
Right, okay.
That is one of the issues that is going to be discussed in the WIPO, because curiously, the country's flag, its logo, its coat of arms, can't be trademarked and are protected under Article 6 ter of the Paris Convention, but its actual name is not protected. Whereas if you're an intergovernmental organization, your name is protected. These are flagrant inconsistencies in the Paris Convention, which will be re-examined at the end of the month by WIPO.
And the reason I ask it is, again, it's not really from the country level, but if we expand, if we get outside of the primarily country, and you get into municipalities where it may become more of an issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Oscar. Thank you. Actually, two short questions. Have you considered short names, official names, abbreviation, and combination, phonetical combination of countries for this issue?
Oh, you mean spaces, hyphens, and underscores, and...
No, I'm talking about, for example, Mexico is Mexican United States is official name, and Mexico is short name. Abbreviations could be USA for United States.
I think if you look at the... I kind of did some staff work on this sent a list to... Affilias, which Affilias has published, and it shows that the names that are being reserved are the short names.
So
the long names have not been reserved. Well, some names are longer than others, and short names that have got combined names are presented without the space. And to the best of my knowledge, those countries which have an interest in the long name have not actually raised the issue. I think we're on track to find a solution on the basis of the published list only, and I wouldn't want to complicate matters further by enlarging that to long names, which, after all, apart from official documents, are rather infrequently used. So, Elizabeth, we hope that France will be protected, but La République Française will probably not be on the list.
The second one, could we have that list, or is the same list that Affilias has in the website?
It's on Affilias' website.
It's the same one?
Whether it's been updated to include Letzeborg, I'm not quite sure, but
it's on
Affilias' website.
Is the one you are considering?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Marilyn.
I think I might start my comments by suggesting that the effort to resolve this is probably actually above our pay grade. And to note that in the past, we were very fortunate to be able to punch to WIPO in a previous work effort to provide the work that was needed that led to the development of the UDRP, but we did not, within the Names Council, undertake the development of new trademark law or the clarification of trademark law in dealing with disputes. We looked before to the work of the Standing Committee at WIPO, and my suggestion really is that we either formally or informally work with the ICANN staff and others to ensure that in the work that goes forward at WIPO, Christopher, that particular attention maybe is given to the implications of the collision space. I think that it's lack of certainty that bothers many of us. And if there are rules that can be pointed to, then there are means to incorporate those rules as new names are introduced. So I don't have a specific solution for any of us except to note that what all of us are looking for is to make the Internet easier to navigate for the user and to provide more certainty and to avoid collisions, which only tends to confuse the user and really cause the kind of problems none of us want. I'm glad to hear that ICANN may become an accredited observer, and I'm sure that some of the other participants in the Names Council through their own organizations may be also involved in that. But it seems to me that from our standpoint, further work within that committee is particularly important for us to be able to reference that work and then to think about how to respond to it or incorporate it.
Okay, I think we'll probably have to end it there for time anyway. Christopher, thank you very much for joining us. It was useful clarifications. Quite where we go from here, I think, is uncertain, but indeed there were bodies are discussing that. I think it's interesting to note that this is simply another example of problems that tend to be created as a result of artificial restrictions. And I'm sure there are many wry smiles in the intellectual property community in particular when we see that countries are complaining about name grabs. So the problem is not unknown to many. The solution, I think, is known, and it is another reason why I think we're looking very carefully at the work of the evaluation processes for new TGLDs, see what we can learn from that, and move to the future where these problems would not be with us. Thank you for joining us.
Can I just appreciate, does this topic fall under any of the existing council task forces? Is a task force assigned to continue to look at this, or is this not been assigned?
No, not.
I don't think we need to right now, but I'd suggest as chair that you assigned it to one of the task force. I don't think we need to create another task force, but some task force should be addressing this.
Can I ask you a question? It should be addressing what?
I think there's a WIPO meeting coming up. There's a continuing dialogue. There's a continuing progress that's being made on the question, to put it most succinctly in terms of the Council's previous work, the extent to which governments at the national, provincial, municipal level have a preemptive right over domain names. I think there are continuing developments, and some part of the Council should be monitoring and assessing them. Otherwise, the Council will have to sort of come back every time and say, what do we think about what we've heard? If there's not a subgroup doing it, then we all have to do it, and events are certainly taking place.
Milton, and then Peter.
Well, I think the consideration here is that this is bypassing the NSO process, and there's going to be mission creep. It's some names here, there'll be some names there, and then maybe names in .com that haven't already been bought or sold. And it seems to be bypassing the consensus-based process of the domain name supporting organization. And I think we ought to make that known that we feel this is our problem.
Okay. And Milton?
Yeah, probably the most appropriate existing task force is the UDRP task force, which, particularly because it is expanded beyond the constituency, has a lot more expertise than the others. I hesitate to throw other things at them completely out of the blue. That's not really what they signed up for, but you do have a lot of good people on that committee, and it's fairly balanced, and they're all capable of looking at this issue.
I take a bit of exception to the idea that an exterior creation of either a treaty by nations or creation of trademark law or clarification of trademark law, which may have international implications, should be viewed as a violation of the bottom-up consensus process that ICANN is engaged in. I think there are limitations to the kinds of things that ICANN says grace over, and that we very carefully try to recognize and refer to law, but not to find ourselves in a position of trying to create that law. I do think it would be very useful too if the UDRP task force could monitor the work that is going on, and in particular to consult with ICANN staff if they are going to take observer status in this working effort, that could be very helpful and could provide feedback to us about this progression that goes on. We need to remember that the work that is going on at WIPO addresses the physical world and the virtual world. And we certainly are looking only at the collision aspects or the limitation aspects as we bring names into the DNS.
Okay, other thoughts there? If not, then perhaps Caroline, I don't think it's fair for you to need to respond to that now. But perhaps we can think about that offline and see what may be an appropriate way forward for dealing with issues that relate here. Because I know you have some very specific task ahead of you, which is not insubstantial. Let's move on. We're going to go back to our original agenda order and the item adoption of final report from the review task force. This report is offered to you by the task force. It has been through a process of an interim report, contribution from the members of the task force, and which are one from each constituency plus the General Assembly. It has been through a comment period and is now presented for endorsement by the Council itself. I was passed during the currency of this meeting some comments from the GTLD constituency, which I have to say are late with a capital L, considering that the constituency has been a participant in the task force. But perhaps you'd like to talk on those so we can cure that issue before we move on, Roger.
Thank you, Philip. And first, apologies for the late contribution. We did participate in the task force. I'm told by our participant that these points were made in the task force, but they are important enough. The constituency felt they were important enough so that we felt we should circulate a paper and bring our concerns to the attention of the council. In the text of the review task force report and recommendations is a provision which the GTLD constituency feels has the effect of fundamentally changing the relationships that exist within the ICANN system. To explain the importance of this change or this proposed change, I should begin by noting that at the end of the day, the Names Council has only as much influence as it commands respect from the internet community, and that the source of our respect is not some authority or some police power that we have, but rather the consensus management process that we undertake, our ability to manage a consensus among different different constituencies. In the original bylaws and the original procedures for the Names Council, and just as importantly in the contracts that ICANN has entered into with all of the registries, there was an effort to sort of define what was meant by the consensus management process. And that definition, in the contractual part, manifestation of at least, is shown in this paper. In effect, it says, in order for the Names Council to show that there has been a consensus, it has to document that an effort was made to solicit opinion. It's got to indicate that what the different views were. It imposes some discipline or some rigor on the consensus management process. One of the provisions of the proposal before us now would delete the requirement of determining community consensus as a prerequisite for the Names Council taking action and presenting that to the ICANN board as a consensus, and substitute for it simply the existence of a two-thirds vote. So the effect of this would be to eliminate the requirement that the Names Council act in a disciplined way in arriving at the conclusion that a consensus exists, and permit the Names Council instead to simply at any time act by a two-thirds vote and declare that that a vote constitutes a consensus. We believe that's not consistent with the entire foundation on which ICANN was built, which is consensus management. It's not consistent with the ICANN bylaws, and it's absolutely not consistent with the contracts that the registries have with ICANN, which specify, in some detail at least, you know, what it means when you say that there's a consensus. Since we're bound to adhere contractually to policies which are arrived at by consensus. Consequently, what we're really proposing is two things. First, to put it most positively, one of the things the council has never really done is define what the procedures are to arrive at a consensus. And the manifestation of that is if you were to ask the question, well, what are the guidelines for our task forces? What are the requirements for task forces? We don't have guidelines for task forces. We don't have requirements. There's no requirement that a task force do anything. And so each task force has its own sort of procedures. And the GTLD constituency is very anxious to work with the council in developing guidelines for task forces, because that really is a way of sort of defining how you go about managing consensus development. But particularly with regard to this, we think the existing language should be retained, and that the council should not adopt this one provision in the review task force report, which would simply substitute the existence of a two-thirds vote for the consensus management process which exists in the current procedures. Thanks.
Thank you, Roger. I think I understand your concern. I mean, the intent of the task force, I think, had not been to change the process that you describe. There had been no desire to to do less in terms of determining consensus. The task force has been charged with attempting to make a definition which would be helpful within the process that it currently engages in, and that was the direction it worked in. I think it found it's strange. The talk of the two-thirds majority vote of the NC was only ever described in the bylaws as a vote that itself, the process has produced a consensus. So it seemed to be a vote by the council of some external process that had happened, and then the council was able to endorse, as opposed to being more participatory. And I think the intent of the task force was to try to say, where are the stakeholders? What is our means of outreach to them? What is the mechanisms whereby we know there is a process in a hierarchy that is leading to that? And where are things more uncertain? And it was that conclusion that came to the feeling that modifying the wording there would be helpful in terms of its clarification, but there was certainly no intent to change the process. And indeed, that was made clear by a later statement that was added to the final report, which was just not a move from the NC, the obligation to discuss issues and outreach to stakeholders and mechanisms such as task forces, working groups, and constituency liaison, in other words, the things that we do all the time. So I understand your concern, I think, but I think perhaps we're looking at the same suggested change of wording, perhaps from slightly different perspectives. But there's some other hands, actually, so let's take those first. Milton, and then YJ, and then Marilyn, did you want to say something?
I did the bitches of
the bitches for you, okay.
Well, I see David Johnson in the audience, and he's going to hate me for saying this, but I think that the notion of consensus has never applied very well to what ICANN and particularly the Names Council does. We are a legislative body. We do pass things based on who has the most votes. I say this as someone who's been on the short end of the voting process most of the time. The notion that in a legislative body the consensus is going to actually solve problems is becoming increasingly difficult to accept. Let's take, for example, the fundamental issues with us today. We have, let's say, transfers of registrars, transfers of names. True consensus policy would mean that VeriSign and all of its competitors would fundamentally come to an agreement about what the policy should be. I see an economic conflict of interest. I see a winner and loser. I see a vote taking place and some people having more votes than others. I see the same thing in the intellectual property sphere. I see the same thing in efforts to regulate VeriSign. I would like for ICANN to be the kind of organ which is based on consensus and which does try to pursue consensus, but I just don't see how that's possible. And it certainly doesn't conform to the reality that I'm familiar with. So I guess what I'm saying is we're sort of just stripping away the mask here and recognizing reality rather than changing anything.
Okay, Wilson, thank you. YJ.
I do have a question regarding the final report, which according to the Section 3, the new constituency, if there is some kind of sort of answers from constituency who is going to be created to the Names Council, then is it going to be recognized by the Names Council? Because according to this report, it is recommended that the petitioner for new DNS constituency is requested by the Names Council to include in any petition the answers to the questions specified in Appendix B. So it sounds like if any sort of interested group can submit the answer sheet to the Names Council, and the Names Council finally agreed to recognize those answers, they may have another constituency accordingly. Is it correct understanding? So yes, for example, like the next our teleconference in this December, if there is some kind of answer sheet, is presented among the Names Council members. So if Names Council members could agree to approve those constituencies, So is it going to be the right process to create the constituency as it described in the final report?
All we were attempting in the task force, I think, was to recognize that the names council is consulted if a new constituent see applies, petitions the board. If we are consulted, we need to be prepared, and therefore having a set of questions that we can ask and have those set out in advance makes it easier, was the way forward. I think that's what we're always saying. We would then, as the council, need to believe that the answers to those questions, in this case the criteria in Appendix B, were satisfactory, so that we could then make a recommendation based on those answers and any other input we had to the board as to our view on that particular petition.
So if Range Council can come up with very positive recommendations in the next teleconference to the board, would they see so that new constituency can be created in Ghana meeting?
Well, there needs to be a process. All we are doing is saying that we recognize we're consulted as part of the process. Here is a preparatory set of questions that will help us in giving an opinion. We're saying, as a task force, nothing more. Anything more, I think, is a function of what the council should decide as a body.
So what kind of consultation? Is it going to be a public consultation process, or?
Is what going to be public consultation?
Let me see if I can try this. I think what YG is asking is, if a new constituency raises its hand and says, here's my document, what kind of process would be followed? And my understanding of that is that the other constituencies have to be consulted, but after that, my direct memory of the process begins
to fade. The ICANN board recognizes constituencies on application to the ICANN board because they go into
exactly. It's entirely a board exercise. It's a group of people to the board. But the board are obliged to consult us.
Right.
And what we're saying is, this is when they consult us, this is our starting point
According to this report, the second point is the task force believes the petitioners of an individual constituency previously communicated to the board should be warmly encouraged to answer these questions. So it means if they sort of submit the answer sheet to the Names Council without any kind of efforts to try to communicate with board, because we tested them already previously. So can Names Council proceed to create this kind of constituency?
At the moment, it's not our task. The Names Council is not. Has not been sitting on an issue, if you like, in terms of a response. What we're saying as a task force is, here is a set of questions. We are aware, task force was aware that there has been in the past a petition to the board from the a group of people wishing to set up an individual constituency, and we merely made the comment as a task force that group should be warmly encouraged to respond to those questions. But we're saying nothing more than that. This is a task force which is reporting to the Names Council, and decisions like that need to be part of the normal Names Council process. That's clear. Richard, you had a question.
Yeah, Philip, you read a portion on the latter part of the task force report that kind of reinforced the requirement for the due process. Could you read that again?
So which were, this is where?
Where you said we're not really sitting in council, but we're in
something too. Nothing should be, should is not required or something.
This is not removed from the NC, the obligation to discuss issues and outreach to stakeholders via mechanisms such as task forces, working groups, and constituency liaisons.
Not removed. Let's read it carefully, Philip, so we can understand what it means.
I think about it.
What section are you reading?
This is page 6. The last part of section 5 before the recommendations. This does not remove from the NC the obligation to discuss issues and outreach to stakeholders via mechanisms such as task forces, working groups, and constituency liaison.
Just to clarify that language, it does not
state that the NC has an obligation to do any of those things. It simply says that this other language doesn't remove from the NC any obligation to do those things. So we're no, I mean, the clarification that I think Richard was seeking is, does that language in your interpretation require that the NC do those things?
I think it does too, actually, but I'm not a lawyer.
If it does, then let's state it that way so that
that is his intention, and I believe that's what it says.
It says does not remove
the obligation. In
other words, where does the obligation exist if this other language is removed?
The obligation is there in the whole
cosmic
process in terms of the bylaws.
So let's just make it specific. I agree. Then
that change does not remove that obligation.
Right, then let's make it specific. There are a few changes to the language. You, instead of not removing an obligation, stating an obligation would go a long way towards addressing that concern. Because you're saying the obligation is there, so let's state the obligation.
I think we're arguing semantics here, but anyway. Richard Barron, on the list.
I think Roger has identified the point that I was going to make, and that is that I think that all of us are in fact sensitive to the concerns of those who have contractual relationships with ICANN, which define the nature of those relationships. But many of us who are affected do not have those contractual relationships, but are just affected by changes and decisions that ICANN makes. And the existence of the consultative process, which does involve task forces and other mechanisms to reach out to the community and to take consultation, has always provided the participation process by which thoughtful input could be undertaken. When I read this, I did not read it in any way as changing that obligation. I did read it as though, and I think here may be the change that perhaps you in fact are focused on, I did read it in fact as making it clear that once the consultation has taken place, that a two-thirds vote of the Names Council equals consensus. A less than two-thirds vote, but more than one-half, I believe, equals something else. In both cases, a resolution or a decision could still be forwarded to the board. That provides certainty that we have not had to now, and certainty that I welcome.
Okay.
There are some concerns that I have that are more closely related to the business side of this, and that is that significant numbers of contractual relationships have been established either by registrars with ICANN, registrars with the registries or registries, and I need to have a comfort level in terms of being able to plan a business that at some point in time something isn't going to get appropriated back to this group, which could significantly affect the business plan and come back out the other side in such a way that it becomes impractical to operate. And I hope you're understanding. If you want me to, I'll use things like a UDRP as a classic example. You know, all of a sudden the environment changes and an entire process is based on something and it gets appropriated back. It can be a definition of what constitutes policy. That's what I'm becoming quite concerned about this. And we're throwing words around that may have one definition in this environment and a totally different definition in a legal environment. I'm seeing problems in issues between registrars, for instance, by definition. You know, in one case you're arguing it's a contractual definition. Who decides where it goes? And that's what's beginning to bother me. Do we decide where it goes, or do the lawyers and the representatives between the contracting parties decide? It seems to me that we may be taking on more here than we are entitled to in some cases.
So are you expressing caution about the same point in the way that the wording is there, or are you making a more
general? Well, I just want to make sure that we don't run into a circumstance where we pass resolutions, including this one here, that either the staff or ICANN decides are impractical because they represent some sort of encroachment on contractual relationships that can't be modified. You know, just because we don't like a specific procedure, or one constituency doesn't like a procedure, they can't suddenly redefine it as a policy. That's what I'm worried about.
Can I offer just one a comment and a proposal? And the comment is to provide two examples of that would illustrate the concern that the GTLD constituency has. Suppose I came to the next council meeting and proposed a repeal of the UDRP. I propose that trademark should have no status in the domain name system. No meetings, no task force, no consultations. I have the 14 votes. If I've got the 14 votes, according to our reading of this procedure, we have a consensus which then goes to the ICANN board as the presumption of what the ICANN board should implement. I've got to demonstrate no disciplined consultative process. I only have to prove that I've got the 14 votes. I come to the next meeting and propose that registrars be required to sell registrations at $1 per year, flat out. That's my recommendation. I've got the 14 votes. That's all I have to prove. I don't have to prove any consultation, no task force, no review. If our reading of this is wrong, and you keep saying, no, it's wrong, it is still intended that there be a management consultation process, then I think we have no substantive disagreement. It's simply our reading of this language differs from your intent of it, and I would suggest that we proceed and approve the rest of the review task force report, take this one item aside, and work on it until we can agree that we have language that we both indicate we want the language to say. Our concern, though, is that there's got to be the discipline of the management consensus process, and not only 14 out of 21 votes before you can go to the ICANN board and say that there's a consensus.
Why
can I come in?
Okay. Can I make a suggestion regarding the new constituencies which I raised? Because I figured out the problem, why I could not really properly understand the way you understand, because this sentence is very unclear about the time frame. So maybe if we can put some kind of specific time frame to create a new constituency, that might be more practical, because as we all know, this individual domain name holders constituency has been requesting to create this constituency since 1999 Berlin meeting. So I think if we just have a very unclear sentence like this, it might delay another process. So it might be much clearer to put some kind of time frame. So maybe next named council teleconference, we expect the answership from those constituencies, and then according to the decision of the named council teleconference, named council is expected to submit according to the consensus, whatever consensus it might be, and can send to the board clearly, rather than just arguing and discussing whether we can see substantial of demand from the community or not.
YJ, I understand your intent, and we know your objective here. What you're trying to do is outside of the terms of reference of this particular task force. We had a very specific set of things to do, and in relation to constituencies and new constituencies, we have fulfilled that role. The wider issue of new constituencies, in particular individual new constituency, is something I think that is within the realm of the new task force we have on structural issues, because of course there is a direct relationship to the developments we've been hearing about earlier, and that's large. And I don't think we can at this time divorce those two developments meaningfully. So I think so the point you're trying to address, I think, will have to be done there. If I can return to Roger's suggestion, it seems to be that we're very close on agreement, and we need to take some time in terms of language. What I was going to suggest is that we hold voting on the report there until the task force has had some dialogue with the GTLD constituency and see if we can come to some agreement on language there.
Thank you.
And we'll bring it back to the December meeting, because I think we are united in intent, and it may just be the semantics we need to iron out. Paul, I think
you got the two-thirds vote, I think.
Well, Philip,
I like to get your unanimity whenever I can. Paul, I think you had a comment, so I wasn't watching my screen as closely as I
Yes, sorry, I've been trying to get in for some time. You've come to a conclusion. I would actually like to, well, I mean, it's a bit academic now. I would be supporting the report as presented for the following reason. Working on the premises, as Roger quite correctly outlines, there is a duty on the Names Council and the board to ensure a consensus process. If the Names Council were to recommend a policy to the board and a consultation process had not been properly undertaken, then the board would probably question the validity of the recommendation from the Names Council. So there is an implied duty on the Names Council to consult both within their constituencies and the broader community to come to a consensus position. My concern is, as is actually happening in the transfer task force, for example, where a constituency decides proactively not to participate, they could hold up the whole process of consensus building in terms of bringing things to a resolution, bringing things to a conclusion. And so my preference would be that we support the report as presented on the condition that there will and always will be, as it implies within the report, be, as it were, a consensus-based process. And if there is not, that inherently means that the resolution or the recommendation would be questioned by the board, or if the board's doing its job, which I'm sure it would be. But you've jumped the gun now, so it's a bit like...
Anyway, thank you for that very valuable contribution, Paul. It was, I think what you're saying is absolutely right there, and I think we've we will progress as suggested. If we're terribly clever, of course, we could even do that by Wednesday, as we happen to uniquely have a second Names Council meeting during this week.
Well, I would urge that to be the case, because it's important this issue and this report be adopted.
Yeah. Okay, then let's try and work towards that. I'm getting nods from everybody.
I'm sorry, is the question that we would take this item up again on the security meeting on Wednesday?
I'm saying if we're able to...
If we're able to, that's fine. We're happy to... the GTLD constituency is happy to work on this. I think we have the same objective.
We're talking about a couple of sentences.
Pardon me?
We're talking about a small amount of text to change.
Yes, I would think so. Otherwise, we're comfortable with the rest of the review task force report.
Okay, well then we'll try to do that. Then we'll end this item and move on. What I propose we do, as we're running out of time and timing in today is rather critical, is that we defer the task force reports, and we'll see if we have time also in our meeting on Wednesday to take some of those. They'll be very short. In which case, Paul, I'd like you to make a nomination for who should do your Who Is report.
As you Marlon Cade, I believe. That would be a good
plan. Okay, so Marilyn will do that, and the others will be here. That brings us back to .org, an interim report, and perhaps we'll just take the update from you, Milton, now in our closing minutes.
The .org task force produced a consensus report with all seven votes, and we posted it for public comment a few weeks ago. We had a fairly short comment period. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks. There was no news release. I had intended to do one, but I didn't know whether I was authorized to do one. So I think we have a very light turnout in terms of public comment. The comments we did get were mostly supportive. There was one particular item that we asked for input on. It was somewhat undecided, and that was a question of the degree to which the new org can constrain the way registrars market .org names. That is, we did not want people to be promoting .orgs alongside .coms. That might be one policy that somebody might propose that would affect and restrict not any consumers, but purely the registrars and how they market the names. The three or four comments that we did receive were all favorable about that, so I have modified slightly the report to incorporate that. The other comments we got raised a somewhat philosophical debate about how detailed this should be, and I think the preponderance of the task force, although not everybody has commented, I think the preponderance of the task force supports my position that we are setting policy here. We are not drafting an RFP. Therefore, we are not trying to tell them exactly how to draft their proposal, exactly what type of incorporation or credentials they should have, and so on and so forth. But we are setting policy, and we're letting the staff of ICANN write the RFP, which, according to the policy document, is then subject to approval by the task force to see that it adequately reflects the policy. So with those two hurdles overcome, I think we just need to get more input on the question of registrars, and then we can easily submit this final report to the Names Council by the next meeting in December.
Sounds good. Questions? Marilyn and then Roger.
I do have a question, and it's something that Milton and I have talked about before. I do not agree and do not support the idea that a task force that is chartered to do a particular task lives on in perpetuity and has ongoing ownership over the implementation of the registry. I think that's very problematic. I understand the interest of those who did the work on the .org task force, but we in fact are creating, and we need to always remember this, we are always creating precedents. And the purpose of generating policy guidance and instruction to the staff is then to end up with a solicitation and with the award to a entity that will follow the guidelines in how they implement the registry and the practices. And to bring this back to ongoing supervision or management or oversight by the task force, I think is very troublesome. I'm not suggesting that consultation with the task force members about our questions or are certain things consistent in an informal manner may not be appropriate, but I don't see a formal ongoing role as something that the Names Council should support.
Okay, I think I can allay those concerns. We're not talking about management of any process. What we're talking about is when the staff drafts an RFP, we look at it and we see whether it actually reflects a policy that was agreed upon, and then we go out of existence, happily. We don't have any, we're not going to select, for example, the registry. We're not going to be around after the registry is selected to wave our fingers at it and tell it it's not doing what we told it to do. We're simply thinking that, you know, there have been, I think, some issues in terms of the way the GTLD contracts were drafted as to the degree to which, of course, the Name Council gave some very vague guidance, but there were issues as to whether those contracts actually reflected DNSO policies adequately. I don't think this is going to be a big problem this time because we're dealing with a much smaller issue, but I certainly think the task force, it's not at all unusual for it to just look at the RFP and see if it reflects the actual policy.
Milton, I think what you're saying is probably quite wise. Ordinarily, indeed, my preference would be to dissolve a task force the moment its terms of reference have been completed. In your case, I think the terms of reference probably would have been completed by the time the report is out. And what I would suggest you have before us also at the same time as the report is a suggested new terms of reference, if you like, for the last thing you'll be doing. So it's clear as to what the task force is then going to be about and indeed its own life, just so we can then approve the two together, ideally. And fairly short.
You don't think that's already contained? Have you read the...
I'm not recalling it. If it's there already, then we're home and dry. If not, it may be a useful clarification.
She says we'll review the RFP.
Roger,
you had a comment.
I actually agree with Marilyn's point, but I thought the part of it that jumped out at me, if the recommendation said that the ICANN management should share the, you know, consult with the task force or some such thing, then that would be what you would expect from a policy management group. But it says here task force approval should be obtained before publishing the request for proposals, which then puts the task force, I guess it would be the first time we've delegated authority to a task force to act on behalf of the council, and it would put the task force in some kind of administrative role of being the final approval on the RFP, which...
Okay, so we could substitute Name Council for task force.
Well, it just seems to me it's what you want is a consultation, not an approval.
Well, consultation sounds more extended and endless and managerial than what I'm proposing.
I'm not trying to fine-tune the words, but I think at the council and task force should remain at the policy level, not the administrative level. I only had two quick questions, actually. Given the policy focus of this,
there were two areas where the task force recommendations really went outside of what I would think of as normally policy and into details. One is the one you mentioned, it says the marketing practices should not encourage defensive or duplicative registrations, which is sort of why do we care what registrars are doing? And the second is the task force specifically asked that the RFP not require a non-refundable application fee larger than US $1,000, which is sort of setting the fees for applications. And these didn't strike me as obviously policy recommendations.
Well, that's where the structure of the proposal does get into policy. If you set the non-refundable fee at a certain level, you basically reduce the field of applicants significantly and raise issues of whether you're doing this to discourage bogus applications or to finance ICANN. That, I think, is a policy issue. What was the other question concern you had was about the
marketing practices.
Marketing practices of registrars. Well, you can. Is Guillermo here? I'm responding to. Again, that had support from a number of people that were concerned about creating the most light-handed possible way to discourage the need for businesses to engage in defensive registrations within .org and to protect the identity of org as a, you know, fundamentally unique kind of TLD for non-commercial free speech individuals and households and people who register there now and differentiate its identity from .com.
Well, can I share my observation about this task force? This task force seems to very productive and seems to try to work out things done. And also, each constituency sent our own representative who is supposed to sort of exercise the representing voices from the constituency. So I don't personally have any kind of problem to give this task force some kind of role to decide some policy-related issues. And also, as Roger pointed out earlier, we don't really have any specific format of the task force operation. So this task force might be our first task force, which seems to have some kind of substantial decision-making process. And since that's the sort of the listening the burden of the rest of the NEMS council members, but as we exercised earlier, this task force is needed to bring the resolutions or any kind of decisions made within the task force. So we don't really have to worry about this whole recommendation from those task force.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you very much for that. So, Milton, we'll be hearing back from you in December then with a final report. There'll be a comment period for News Council final intervention for what you'll be posting before that and come back to us with a revision on terms of reference if you think that's going to be necessary, having reviewed the existing terms. We'll stay pass on the other item of the agenda until our meeting on Wednesday, if there's time then. Which brings us on to.
Can I say one thing? Because I may not be here Wednesday, and I'll have asked to do the UDRT report. But I did, and since I won't be here, whatever, in March, want to say that my task force was very good, and for the most part was very, very active and participated. But I wanted, since it's one of the first times that we had the GA, we have this new task force to participate. Their representative, Dan Steinberg, was extremely helpful, both in offering to translate into French, but also in taking the burden of accumulating all the input and putting it into a form and revising and revising and revising. And so I wanted the council to be aware that, again, it was a very positive experience, but I wanted to personally thank Dan for his efforts.
Thanks so much for that, Kelly. Is this therefore your last meeting? Yes, with us.
Maybe.
You'll be on a call still. Your elections aren't. Okay, that's fine. Ken, perhaps just one item than the other business, which is the all important item of dinner on Tuesday.
Tomorrow night, Charge House, approximately 1 mile from here.
check with the concierge to fill this 9 o'clock. I believe that there's a reception that goes until approximately 8:30 tomorrow night, is it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be enough time to get over there.
Okay. Absolutely. Is there any other business that can't wait until Wednesday? Yeah. Then we will adjourn and meet again on Wednesday. Thank you very much.
And if you're not here, stay here tomorrow. I'll be at the
mall. Well, we really say goodbye.
Okay.
I don't know where I'm
going. If for some reason we miss each other, maybe I'll give it to Philip. That's it.
So,
About the shape I'm in. I can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answer that you want me to. Now when I talked to God, I knew he'd understand. He said, stick by me and I'll be your God in hand. Don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answer that you want me to.
With the for my lady, got the special sword just to see my baby. My baby, my baby, and of course I'd do anything for her. Any kiss she wants to show her, honey, show her. Get my sword, not my sword, son. Gimme, gimme some, but don't take the tag. Gimme none. You got to work and deserve to earn it to own it. The one she got, they never ever gonna lose it. No, don't take what's cracking, not forget, and never miss it. Of your kingdom, my baby got lost. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. She ain't just sweet. Well, that's the funky lemonade you got, brother, baby, is it special for me? Did you make it today? Cause I always stand by if you like me too. Yeah, I'll do anything that you could ever want for me. Do a kiss for summer, this a smile and it's done. Miss, I'm your miss, stop my sister, just to stop. My mother's your mother, father's your father. It all started when I kissed her. I missed her, dig. It was love at first sight. Yo, no better when it started. I ain't broken hearted, but baby, I need some time, some time alone with the crew. Yeah, to do the stupid things that we used to do. Upon this, she slapped me with the fire van. Y'all, this is loud. Not gonna leave it. My baby got thoughts. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. Nah, she ain't that sweet, see. Baby, what I want to do, for I just want you to give my direction. I gave you all I have, but then you still act mad. You don't give me no attention. My baby got forced, and of course, as a matter of course, she does what she wants to, because she's the boss. Reasons I'm upset about the situation, cause like they think I'm on some extended vacation, cause I don't get out here to see my boy and me. The only time I leave the house is to go with through the snow for some more. What you want me for? What could you put this time? I'm the world, and no, she ain't even mine, ain't even mine. Believe me, what she doing, mate? Yo, I don't know, but baby, I could guess that ain't right. But she got me with it, cousin licked it, standing left to raise my voice, negotiating it. I'm confident, I won't like showing the argument. I shouldn't even started it, I broke your heart. I can't be smart, y'all. I need a thing, so I count my loss. Yeah. My baby got sauce. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. Nah, nah. She got sauce. Got sauce. She got sauce. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. Ain't so sweet like mine. Ain't so sweet like mine. Ain't so sweet like mine. She ain't so sweet, baby.